Lee Carsley has been named, although I'm not sure.
He's not coming now, is he?
Well, that's the thing. Or Big Sam is the other one.
It's always Big Sam, isn't it?
OTB AM live weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.
OTB AM with Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.
He'll be an in-swinger from this side. And he puts it in towards the near post, and it flicked on, and it comes off the hand of Gambazunu and into the back of the net. It's a goal for Serbia. It's been headed in by Sergei Milinkovic-Savic into the far post from the near post area. That's a brilliant header from an excellent corner kick. Gambazunu got a glove to it. I thought he was going to push it out, but unfortunately for him, too much power in it, and it gets into the back of the net. It's Ireland 0, Serbia 1. Here's Robinson putting it across in. It's not a down.
Yes!
It's a goal for Ireland! It's a goal for Ireland after 86 minutes, and it's Shane Duffy in the box, causing problems like a wrecking ball.
It's the morning after the night before, like a wrecking ball. All right, Stephen Doyle in the company of Stewie Byrne at the Aviva Stadium last night. It's the morning after the night before. What are your views of what happened at the Aviva Stadium last night? And there are plenty of disparate views this morning. Where exactly is the soul of Irish football on this Wednesday morning? We're going to bring you lots of conversation about that over the course of the next couple of hours. I'm joined in studio, delighted to say, by Johnny Ward. Good morning, Johnny.
Good morning, Adrian. Good to be here.
And Johnny was at the game last night, so he'll have plenty to chat to us about that, including the atmosphere and how good it was there last night. We'll get to around to that in just a little bit. Also delighted to say at 7:30 this morning, Stephen Hunt. Good morning to you.
Morning, Adrian.
What's your view on where the 1-1 draw with Serbia overrun at the very least last night, but a 1-1 draw, everybody leaves, I suspect, somewhat happy. Your view on where the soul of Irish football is this morning?
Yeah, I just think a little bit... almost after a party to a certain degree a couple of years ago, and then now we're just getting to reality and we've just got to realise where we're at, where we're going, and be ready to go again next month. I don't think we're in a bad place, Adrian. I really don't.
Yeah, like there are a lot of positives to take out of last night. It feels like in a lot of ways it was a sort of game that if you went into the game feeling that it was time for Stephen Kenny to go, you'd have plenty to endorse that. And if you were of the view that Stephen Kenny should hang around and it's a project and he's got to be given time, there's plenty to endorse that too.
Yeah, if you're talking to me about that, Adrian, yes. I agree there's more to come from Stephen Kenny's team, a lot more to come from the players, some real positive signs. And hopefully now we can look forward and realise that Stephen has got this bunch of young players up to a level now where they needed to get to. No matter who came in, to be honest with you, I always said it needed 4 years. So even if Mourinho had come in, I still think he would have needed this time to get this level of players up to where they want to get to and then go again.
Mm. Jeez, don't be afflicting Jose on us, Hunty. That's not a place we're going to be this morning.
Maybe the style of play is a little bit different, of course, but you know what I mean by that, Adrian. I just think we needed some time to bed in. And listen, most of the time these players see Ronaldo on FIFA. That's what they've been playing for the last 10 years of their lives. They're only 17 to 19 years of age, most of the young players. So they're there beside them now in reality. They've had the experience, they'd be better for it, and let's go forward.
A healthy sort of difference of opinion across a lot of the newspapers today and the opinion last night, social media, the TV and everywhere else about exactly what happened in the game last night. What's your view? Were we battered, as some would have it?
I think you put it into perspective who we're playing against. Listen, I think Azerbaijan was the biggest disappointment. We didn't win the game. Serbia have got some really good quality players in the team. So it's going to be a bit more of a matchup, a bit more of a quality versus quality to a certain degree. Vlasovic is the new Harry Kane to a certain degree. I think Spurs, if they had sold him, would have went full tilt to get Vlasovic. So you look at that, you look at the centre-forward pair and the Mitrovic and Vlasovic, and they're a real good quality. So you judge them against each team and you respect each team as you go along. And yes, last night parts of the game we struggled. I think the second half we went a bit flat, and I think the substitutions helped us raise and go again. So I'm not too sure what we expect at the moment. But all these young players coming in for the last year and a half, I just think we need a bit of a reality check and put it into a football perspective without the emotions of supporting Ireland, which we all love obviously, and take it from there.
Like, Serbia is a population, Hunty, of 7 million, I think, give or take. How do we play like them? Because, you know, it was just, it was a pleasure to see the way they played football last night. And, you know, their technical ability, their little 1-2s that we were a little bit bamboozled at times. Will we ever play like that?
Yes is the answer. I think, I believe these young players have a lot to go on the international stage. But I think for these young players going back now, they have a lot to go to get into their first teams back home. It's okay saying Adam White has had three good games and he's going to go back to Norwich, but he's going to come back in the same situation in 6-7 weeks if he doesn't play games. So we need him to play games. Gavin Bazuna has gone to League One to get regular football as a goalkeeper, and you can see already his second season as a young goalkeeper, he's progressing. So I think we can play that way. We can play neat 1-2s. We played some good football last night in terms of trying to be inventive and not panic on the ball instead of kicking it long. He doesn't want him to kick it long. That's clear to see. I see some people say, oh, we booted it. We didn't boot it long in the last 5 minutes when we're losing a goal, and under instructions from the manager, the player stuck to it. So I do believe we will play a tidy style of play, and we've got to find a way. Stephen's got to find a way of getting the wins under his belt playing this way.
Yeah. Like, and on that, because I think that's a really important point that we should get into over the course of the morning, because there's far too much time spent debating whether Kenny, I think, should stay or go on. Not enough time debating the details of it. So, like, on that point, and you mentioned about being flat in the second half, and on the opportunity for us to score goals, it's not newsflash, and it ain't going anywhere anytime soon. When you looked at the game last night and our capacity to get just interesting listening to the reaction about whether we were battered or we were overrun. It was some version of either of those. But certainly we had no great, we had plenty of ability to get the ball into the final third. But when we get there, there's very little that can be done. And I don't think Adam Ida, certainly in the role, he may have the capacity to score a goal every other game, but the role he's playing, it that doesn't look likely. How do we solve that one?
Games, unfortunately, is going to be a little bit of suffering by playing regular games. If Adam Ida is coming into a team full of 10 experienced players and he's just popping in, he can afford then to stay away from the ball and allow our players, if we have better players, to get up the pitch and stay in the box. But Adam Ida done a good job for the team over the three games. He was a very consistent threat in behind and was a consistent good hold of play that he had. He allowed us to get up the pitch as well. And I think over the three games, he'll be the one that will go back and say, I've done my best. But to get more goals, we've constantly scored goals from set pieces over the last 30 years. We needed to score more. We did score a couple of goals from set pieces. Well, Duffy was a cross as well, and Egan was definitely a set piece. So I think we need to chip in with goals. And then once the confidence comes and the games are under your belt, then we will find a way of scoring goals from outfield.
I think with Ida as well, Hunty, like, he was so exposed in terms of lack of support when the ball was hit long to him. Like, he was basically like a man out in the middle of the ocean. And over the three games, I think he will have learned a lot in terms of just the hard games that you're going to have at international level. But, like, I think you'd argue that he will learn from this as well, because, you know, he had three very different games in many respects.
Yeah, he did. And I said a couple of years ago now that I think Adam Ida, of all the strikers, is very has the blinkers on. I mean, he's really focused on having a career for himself. You can tell by him, his body language. So he will be working every day in, day out, to get better. He did mix his game up in the three games. That's why I said he was a threat in behind, and he was coming short, and he was winning free kicks. This will do him the world of good. He'll now look at his record and go, okay, I just needed to add some goals to it. I think you're going into a team, well, you're just trying to please the manager. You're not thinking about yourself. You want to do well for the team. And then all of a sudden, after the 4 or 5 games, you go, I'm not having this. I've got no goals. I'm going to be a little bit more selfish for myself. If they want to get the ball to me, I've got to be in the box and I've got to score some goals for myself.
One question on that, Hunty. How do we get more then? Like, we leave this window and we go, look, the obvious players that have done brilliantly for us, and he's one of them. But how do we leave it saying, how do we get more out of Adam Ida?
I think Adam has to stay away from the ball over time. Not so much now, because I think our team is in transition. It's not in a good moment where we want to be, and I'm sure we want to be better in that way. When we play out from the back, I always look at it and go, okay, how are we going to score a goal by playing this way? So obviously by playing out of the back, and the way we do, you're trying to suck teams onto you to leave gaps in between. At the moment, there's too much of a gap between the back three and the wing backs to the centre forward. If we have more players just off Adam, or we're treading balls through the line. We need then the likes of Horgan, the likes of Hendricks, playing in the little pockets, and then carrying the ball at the defence. You need runners in the team, pretty much, and you need ball dribblers, Hazard. Look at Lukaku, say, for example, a good example of he can come short, but he can go long. Uh-huh. He needs boys in the hole that will allow him then to make them runs that are going to be straight in on goal instead of down the side, instead of holding it up. He just needs better players in the pockets to be able to, not better players, that's wrong to say on the Irish lads, just to be able to carry the ball better and get in better positions by playing our way.
Who are the best players that you've seen then over the last three games and maybe even a little bit beyond to fulfil those roles for Ireland?
Yeah, it's a good one. I think Jamie McGrath, having just come into the team and having been playing Scottish football, has done really well over the couple of games he played. I think Darragh Horgan, even though he's playing League One, carries the ball very well in tight situations. So we're going to have to try and get these players. I'd say Darragh Horgan, for example, is a Johnny Williams of Wales. He's playing League One with, playing League Two, actually, Swindon, but he managed to get on the ball for Wales the other night and get in pockets and play through balls. So we've got to find a way, not very glamorous the names, I know, in terms of Premier League players. Darragh Horgan is not at the moment, but he is a very good ball dribbler. There's players like Jamie McGrath. I just think we need a little bit more of an injection of pace in that position. Yes, we have the Malumbies, we have the Jason Knight who's injured, Josh Collins to do the dog work and to be good for the team. And then you obviously need a bit more of a number 10 to get into positions.
You're badly missing out Benny as well, weren't you? Because like that's as you say, we'd four narrow midfielders who wouldn't be necessarily blessed with pace. That's that link between defence, attack, midfield wasn't there. And like Benny was one of these players that like we shouldn't forget the impact that he would have had. Pace is so important that any level pace will do you like a big service against a tiring defence. We didn't have him.
Yeah, and even if you're picking up balls in central areas and you're carrying it wide, you're creating space then for the wing-backs to get in behind us more. We just need a bit more. I think Aaron Connolly, long-term, will be that number 10 that plays in the hole, that drifts out wide after a few games. I think he'll become better. But again, I go back to it.
Connolly has the game intelligence, though. Like, it just doesn't seem to be there to me.
Yeah, it's just not there at the moment based on the games. I think the Portugal game was a real good example where he got in positions for the counter-attack, looked really dangerous, and then just fluff these lines at the last minute. That can happen as a young player. I think over time, with more games and more focus, that he will then become a better player. Now, Connolly has question marks going back to his club, from clubs in England. He needs to realise where he's at, how lucky he is, and take it from there. Mm. I don't think he's a bad lad. I just think he needs to go, right, OK, I've got some real good attributes. How am I going to use them, and when am I going to use them? And when I get my chance at Brighton, I need to stay in the team. And then when I go with Ireland, I need to bring that Premier League quality, which eventually he'll have to do. And I'm not putting the pressure on him now, but eventually he'll have to bring that quality that he has to the table.
Yeah, I don't know, against Portugal, how he wasn't lashing the ball in behind 47-year-old Pepe and having a bit of a pop at him. You've only got a couple of minutes. You're probably off in the school run now in a few minutes, but we want to give you an opportunity. Your boy, Matt Doherty, it's been a brilliant window for him.
My boy, Matt Doherty, my good friend / known him a long time.
Well, you were saying it was your son, I think, the last time when you were on with
Nate. Yeah, he is. Like, I felt bad for his dad, actually, because his dad loves him very much. Like, so, no, he is. I know him very well. We got on really well. I think he has a big season ahead of him. He played well last night. He's been playing well in the games. The last three games have really shown his quality in terms of in possession, especially, and in defensive in Portugal. He was excellent. It goes to show defenders don't have to make tackles to win the ball back. You can allow centre-forwards, you can allow wingers to give you the ball if they're not good enough. So he's had very good games. I think Seamus did well in the games. I think he'd be disappointed in probably close down for the shot better, but knowing Seamus, he'll know that himself. Listen, we're okay. I think we're not in a great position. I think the three games coming up, we need to get some points on the board and try and finish above Luxembourg if we can. If not, it'll be forever with the player. So we've got big games coming up.
That's where we're at the moment.
At the minute. What's Matt or any of the rest of them saying to you about the... I see his quotes here last night about the quality of the coaching and very praiseful of the quality of the coaching they're getting with Ireland. What's he saying to you about the coaching staff?
Saying they're all useless. Of course not. He's literally said to me the last time, and Matt's pretty straight, you know, with I played Gosman maybe just before he come back for pre-season, and he was really impressed with the coaches, how they're going about it, how they're trying to change things. Listen, Stephen Kenny's been really brave. He's changed a lot of the backroom staff, and a lot of familiar faces would have went with that, including all different bits and pieces behind the scenes. I think they felt like it was needed to be done. Now they've had their time to bed in with their bits and pieces. They're finally getting their coaching across. I think when you go from Mick and Martin, who are man managers, are very well organised teams, don't get me wrong, and very good coaches, to a Stephen Kenny where you have new ideas. It's not new to the players because they're used to playing it over here, but new ideas coming into, like any new manager, and you try and enforce it too quick, it can be a problem as well. So I think they've realised now that they're allowing the players to be able to go forward, but also this is what we have to do defensively as well. So they're giving them a lot of information to take on board. I think they're finally getting it and they're beginning to enjoy it.
Yeah, I think that's crucial in terms of the decisions that are made from here on out. Stephen, I know you got to go. Thanks a million.
Cheers, Adrian.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Stephen Hunt on the line there, reacting to the 1-1 draw with Serbia at the Aviva Stadium last night. It is 7:45. It's Wednesday morning. It's OTB AM. We're brought to you by Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. Here's what's coming up for you between now and 10 o'clock this morning. We've had Stephen Hunt there with his reaction to the game last night. Pretty impressed, it has to be said. I think generally with some of the players, and obviously there are criticisms to be had as well, and we'll get into much more of those as well over the course of the morning. Plenty more reaction. We'll bring you some of the post-match reaction from those involved last night, Stephen Kenny and some of the players as well. Let you know what's happening across the back pages, mainly football, it has to be said, a few other bits and bobs as well. Let you know what's happening there just after 8. We're going to be joined on the line by Ger Gilroy and Dan McDonnell just after 8 this morning, and we will further debate the current state of play with the soul of Irish football at that time. John Duggan is going to be with us to get his reaction. Johnny, alongside me in the studio this morning as well, was at the game last night, so we'll get his thoughts on the atmosphere and his general impressions as well. We're going to talk Mayo Tyrone in the company of Tommy Rooney and Anthony Moyles as well. That's coming your way after 9 o'clock, and we've plenty of comments coming in as well too, so keep those lashing into us this morning. We'll bring you a couple of flavours of them here. John Hoare has been warning. Good morning to you, John. Fine line between us having 5 points from these three games or 0 points from the three games. Both were very possible, and it would have been it's a fair point, isn't it, Johnny? And it would have been a very different conversation, if ands and buts. And I know Stephen Kenny doesn't want to get overly involved in a conversation about luck, and he got a slice of it last night, but it was long overdue.
It was long overdue. I think it was a big slice of luck last night because, you know, essentially we were second best in that game. We were basically given the runaround by a very, very good technical Serbian team. Our four midfielders, I think they were so tired chasing basically passengers in the game to some extent because they couldn't get on the ball, that they weren't able to really kind of help Adamida when we were in transition. And that was kind of evinced by, you know, the changes at the end when we did go, when we did stretch Serbia, we took a few of the midfielders off and we started to improve a bit. But it was a strange night because Ireland didn't do anything particularly good in possession for much of that game. In the second half against Azerbaijan, the traits that brought us the goal were effectively borrowed from an old Ireland. James McLean had more touches, I think, than any other player. Yes, you know, there was a moment 10 or 15 minutes from time where I think, you know, the fans behind the goal started to sing Stand Up for the Boys in Green. And to my mind, it seemed everyone in the stadium stood up for a team that was losing 1-0 to Serbia, being given an absolute runaround in a dead rubber game, having failed to beat Luxembourg and Azerbaijan at home in the group. And for some reason, the crowd decided that, no, we're actually going to back these young players. And I think, you know, from the moment that when the players took the knee, and I don't think this point should be lost as well, when the players took the knee, there was a really warm reception for that. And I think then if you lead that into the fact that our two outstanding players in the night for me were Omobe Madele and Gavin Bazuna, I think the crowd were like, these are young kids, this is a new Ireland emerging, give them a chance, you know, don't be booing them and moaning if we're losing to Serbia. And I really, really feel the players got a lift from that. I know you're talking about intangibles here, but the last 10 minutes there was a special vibe in a dead rubber game. And as much as it was a marriage of Gavin Bazuna playing this kind of really daisy cutter pass to Mo Madele, who picks up the ball and starts running at defenders, and then eventually in another move has a shot himself. It was a marriage of that and Shane Duffy trying to score and us scoring basically from the arse of an opposing player. It was a marriage of the old and the new, but there seemed to be something different about the fans, in that they kind of reflected that it's not all about Stephen Kenny here and this stupid endless debate. It's about the fact that Serbia is a country of 7 million people and they're playing us off the park. Yes, we're showing enough promise, I think, that maybe one day we'll get there, and we have a lot of young players coming through, and people just went home happy. Maybe it was the nice weather, I suppose, but they went home happy.
I think that's an important point, and I think that I wouldn't agree with the with them being intangibles at all, Johnny, to be honest. I think that's really important that the players leave that camp feeling hugely positive about what's going on, that they're all speaking very positively about the coaching staff, that the result, let's face it, went our way in the end, albeit jammy. Like that's a very tangible thing, I think, that they can point at, that they can tap into. I think the fans, the importance of the 25,000 fans, which was the maximum or close to it that was allowed in the stadium last night, being behind the team and doing all the things that you've just been speaking about, I think is monster. They're the paying punters. They're the people that the FAI want in the gate. They're the people that are going to decide whether this thing is a success or not. I think that's, I wouldn't agree with the intangible aspect of that. I think they're hugely important.
Yeah, and you look at the viewing figures that I saw for the ladies' football final on Sunday, like staggeringly good on TV, and the FAI is obviously trying to get a sponsor here. What is it trying to sell? I think it's trying to sell a new Ireland here, where we're trying to go a different way. You know, it's very much our DNA is changing. I think, you know, we've a mixture of people from different parts of Ireland playing for us now. The days of the expats kind of seems to be almost gone. And I think Gavin Bazuna lifted the nation last night. I really do. His performance was ridiculous. My brother's a big Liverpool fan. I was saying to him at the game, your main keeper here, we're going to have a regular for Liverpool potentially who's not going to be starting for Ireland, and that's absolutely insane. Bazuna's that good, and it was the athleticism, the saves with his feet, the fact that he was smothering these balls that were harder than they looked in the first half. He was always coming for crosses. He obviously came for that one-on-one, which he missed. But just it was that Farrow kind of incident as well, where he gave the ball away but immediately saved the penalty. And he's just his ability to get up and get on with it. An incredibly good attitude for such a young kid from the Tala area. He represents New Ireland. And we were looking at the emergence of a truly, truly world-class player. And you're just thinking, when this kid starts playing for Man City, how good could he be? And I think he really lifted the nation last night. To do him and Omar Medele, who I thought was outstanding at times in terms of old Irish last-ditch defending, but also a real kind of almost arrogance on the ball for a kid who's only had, what, one start for Ireland. And I don't know, these were the bits of comfort that I got from the game. And I went home acknowledging that it was a bit of a Mick McCarthy slash performance, in the sense that we got a goal from a set piece and we rallied rather than had any real control in the game. But it was just the emergence of these kids and their attitude to say we can be a bit different here.
Yeah, and I mean, if that Obama Dele goal goes in towards the end, I mean, like, it's just a different conversation this morning. And I know it's all if, ands and buts, but, like, you know, I think those things are worth bearing in mind. Will has been in touch this morning as well. Good morning to you, Will. Didn't really play through the middle or a slick passing game, which is what Kenny is meant to be bringing us. Best thing from these set of games with the performances of Ida Omabama Deadly, as he calls him here, and Bazunu. And that's, I don't know, Will, if your insinuation is that's nothing to do with Stephen Kenny. I think it's important to bear in mind that he's the one who's brought them through as well.
Well, Will's sex is very interesting there. It's more to do with Ireland's economy than Stephen Kenny, because we had people coming over to this country from the likes of Nigeria and all these countries who decided that they'd settle in Ireland for a better way of life. And effectively, the sons of immigrants are punching way above their weight. You've mentioned three players there. I stand to be correct here, but I think they may all have Nigerian heritage, the three guys you mentioned. And as much as Adam Ida sort of, you know, he didn't have a great game, but it was impossible for him to sort of have a great game because he was so isolated. And I think as well, Adrian, that spark of pace that he showed in that initial chance we had against Azerbaijan. And at times last night, the crowd really gets off its feet because we haven't seen that much from Ireland in recent years. A burst of pace where you have a Serbian defence that was kind of a little bit petrified of the speed of Adem Ida. And just also the fact that he's fresh, he's young, and he's part of that Kenny under 21 team that was, you know, able to dismantle Sweden on a couple of occasions, particularly memorably in Tala after going behind, and kind of have a bit of a carefree attitude maybe that we don't associate with Irish sides. But Will's point is very interesting there. They are three sons of immigrants, and let's not lose sight of the brilliant, brilliant role that these kids have had in our communities and how they're totally punching above their weight in sport and how much we are in a better place because of that. I think the key for us now is just to make sure that these kids all play football, because they'll be lost to other sports as well, like so many have, you know.
Yeah, hugely important too. Yeah, Will has actually been back in touch with us on YouTube, and he says that, no, I think Kenny is very good at developing players and he is responsible for that. So didn't want to misrepresent you there, Will, and thanks for giving us that clarity on. Loads of comments coming in, by the way. We're going to dip into those right through the morning. Plenty of opinion on it. Everybody's very steadfast in their opinion and very firm in their opinion, and quite regularly differing opinions. So we'll bring you lots of those over the course of the morning as well. It's coming up from 5 to 8, plenty to come. We're going to dip into some of the reaction last night. Here's the manager, what he had to say after the result last night.
I felt we deserved at least 4 points from the other two games and not six, but the way we didn't just see the last minute out in Portugal, but the so to get only have one coming into that game was a bit of a real kick in the teeth. And I think, as you said, the players showed sort of resilience to accept them defeats, and the quick turnaround of 3 games in 6 days, which is the 3 competitive games, which is a new concept for them over the last while, and to show the sort of determination and resilience to hang in there and realise that they've had a couple of kicks in the teeth, had a few, and to get a break probably at the end, which they deserved, you know, because they've been in short supply. So they it was a good feeling in the stadium, because it was great to see people celebrate the goal in the stadium, even if, you know, even if it was an OG, and that's the just to have the level of passion around again, because that's been, you know, through the pandemic, that's been difficult for everyone. So people love the idea of coming and following and supporting Ireland. People are very proud to do that, and you know, we're all really proud to represent Ireland.
Paul McGee says Ireland learning to walk, while the likes of Serbia have at least 50 years of playing football ahead of us. Fergus Keogh, Serbia may have only 7 million people, but they don't play rugby, Gaelic football or hurling.
Yep.
Which is a fair point, and it's probably tapping into exactly what you're saying. Gerry O'Malley, the majority of Irish supporters are not happy with the media giving Kenny an easy ride. Very lucky to draw, could have 3 or 4. Kenny cannot win a match at this level after 16 games, only Andorra, repeat of Dunfermline. So look, at that opinion is out there, and we will of course bring that side of the argument as well this morning. Patrick, Roy Keane would love this, celebrating a 1-1 draw at home and the 2 points on the table with our goalie man of the match. Imagine, with 5 laughing face. Like, I mean, Roy Keane
is looking for a job for the last 10 years. So
he'd also, like, explain that to the 25,000 people who left there buzzing last night. Like, that's, yeah, that's what it is. Stephen Kenny, on the composed performances, as we've been discussing, of Bazunu and Omobamadele after the draw last night.
Couldn't have predicted that Andrew and Gavin played as well as they did. You know, they were absolutely, Andrew, up against Mitrovic and Vlahovic there, you know, and really physically, really powerful guys. And but he just has another gear. He's so quick, and his composure. The two players, Gavin and Andrew, the composure is incredible, you know. And I think, but it's early days for them. You know, Andrew's only played 7 league games for Norwich, and he's played, did a great pre-season. Played every minute in pre-season, and I know how highly they regard him there. They really do regard him highly, and he showed why tonight.
These guys are unbelievable, but the composure, did you call it arrogance a bit earlier on, of Andrew Mbadele on the ball last night was certainly oozing in confidence like such, and he's been the same throughout the window. His composure on the ball is incredible. Let's take some of his comments from last night. Here he is about what it felt like to play his first match in front of Irish fans.
It's one that I won't forget. You can never get your first start in an Irish jersey back, so I kind of, before the game, I wanted to perform, and it was my first time starting and playing in the Viva, and the crowd was just I've never experienced anything like that in my whole footballing career, so that's probably the highlight of my career so far.
Yeah, you were very calm and composed given the scale of the occasion and the quality of the opposition.
Yeah, I think in those situations you kind of have to block out the crowd at times when you're kind of under pressure, and your opposition as well, because at the end of the day it's 11v11, and you just kind of have to be calm in those, because there's no point being rushed and stuff when you're under pressure.
Yeah, and just lastly for me, Andrew, that shot near the end, did you see your name up in lights, and did you think it was 2-1?
I was taking my jersey off already straight away after I left my boot, but yeah, well, to be fair to the keeper, he pulled off a good save, but yeah, I was ready to jump into the crowd.
Couple of aspects in that as well. Like, I'm not generally mad on the three at the back, and I thought that, well, it was five at the back, let's call it spade a spade. Mm. It was actually 10 at the back at times, but the five at the back with the four narrow midfielders, it just meant that, and James McLean and Matt Doherty, who I thought was outstanding, and I have to say I thought James McLean all in all had a, by his standards, had a very good game. It's very, very difficult for them when there's an overlap, and so on and so forth. And you can argue the toss, but when you think of the one of the bonuses of the three at the back is you can allow your centre, one of the three central defenders, to effectively go forward. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, one of the first times I saw this was the likes of Tony Adams used to do it at Arsenal when Wenger brought it in, when he allowed like him and Bold and them lads the licence to go forward. But Mbo Madele, that chance... you got to remember as well, obviously, that our goal scorer predictably was Duffy the last year from open play. But don't forget as well, John Egan's header that Connolly should have scored from in Portugal, that was set up in the box by centre-back. So that's another aspect of that three at the back, that you can allow them the licence. And invariably, they're not really marked because nobody really knows who to pick them up. But that guy could play... I think Mbo Madele, the way he took on the ball and that, like, if he played in a different position for Ireland, he'd probably look fairly comfortable. He's just an athlete.
Just think of that, looking at the goal last night. And, like, look, it's hard to know. The point that you make about the wing-backs is maybe a favourite, fair enough one. Some of James McLean's best work last night was defensively, snuffing out chances. And, it's certainly one thing you can always say about James McLean is that his work rate never falls off. But, yeah, it's just that bit of where they are getting forward. And it's not just having the pop from 40 yards out, but when they're crossing balls in the box, like, who are the support players for Ida? A lot of them, particularly if the big, like, you know, high balls coming in from the wings, a lot of those players are, not many of them I wouldn't think are above 6 foot. Like, it's very we're putting ourselves in a difficult position to play if that's what we're going to insist on. And like Hunty's point earlier on about trying to, what's the connection between the back three or the back five and the midfield, like, you know, we'd like to see a bit of development of that. Now, you'd want to have somebody in there, you'd Paul Scholes in, I think we'd be flying it.
Well, it's a massive issue for us, Adrian, that holding midfielder. Like, I've hopes for Conor Coventry, just looking down for the 21s, but like, he's gone out and loan at Peterborough. It's going to be a big challenge for him. We really miss a holding midfielder. I think Hourihan, in against particular opposition, he's really, really good on the ball, lovely left foot, brilliant set pieces. But again, it was apparent last night, without trying to criticise the players, that either through tiredness, through years of playing a certain way, there wasn't really a willingness, I thought, from the midfielders to look for the ball like the Serbs did off the back five. And I don't know if that's... I think they were tired a lot of the time from running around, but I think you almost have to be at the game to appreciate that for the defenders, as much as they're trying to play the ball out from the back, you need options ahead of you, and very often they didn't have it. And what we then had was maybe McLean would play a kind of a percentages ball to Ida, and he's passing generally was good, but we have to kind of be better with that link play. And you know, you're talking about this whole debate about Stephen Kenny, but like, I don't think people appreciate how hard it is for these players who've rarely played together to kind of get this fluency that you need. It's not like a club position where you can train. They only have short windows together, and they've come from the guts of, you know, 30 years of us not really playing a particular style like this. So I think it will take time.
Yeah. people talking about the atmosphere at the game last night, Johnny, and particularly when that goal was attempted. But, you know, there were living rooms all around the country where people were getting a bit carried away with things.
And Adrian Barry, actually.
Oh, oh my gosh.
Neither myself or Andrew could.
Oh my gosh!
Oh my gosh!
That
was,
I know. I'm trying to mind my language.
After the watershed,
I'm trying to mind my language. Generally, so. But my wife was taking a cheeky video there, and
this wasn't cheeky. This was staged. You don't say "Oh my gosh" unless you know it's going to be.
I'll show you the full video afterwards. There's a lot. The F word does creep in quite a bit. quite a bit after that. No, there was nothing staged about it. But yeah, I'm sure there was. And look at everybody. That's been the thing. Actually, the same with the Portugal game. Like, you're sitting on the edge of your seat. It's definitely, I think people have become a bit more invested in the fortunes of this team, I have to say, over the last few games. One last clip from a reaction from last night. It's that man again, Andrew Amabandele, and his first start for Ireland and what he's taken away from this international window.
Can I ask, when did you know you were playing, and what was your reaction when you found out?
It was yesterday in the team meeting, and at first, you kind of don't take it in. Then when we walked out of the meeting, went up to my room, and it kind of sank in there. Obviously, I told some of my close family members, and obviously, it's a big occasion. This was my first time starting or even playing in the Viva in front of the home nation, and it was a lot of emotions. Obviously, just excitement, and it was a great feeling.
Did you manage to get any sleep last night?
Yeah, I slept pretty well. I knew how to get sleep.
Just on the bigger picture, I mean, it was so important to get a result of sorts. Now, perhaps not the result you wanted, but how much of a lift do you think that will be for the team going forward?
I think it's a huge lift. Obviously, we didn't win, but I think it's a huge step. We showed that we can go toe-to-toe with these nations, as you've seen in Portugal. With players like Ronaldo, Bruno Fernandes, all these world-class boys, and went toe-to-toe with them for about 85 minutes, and obviously it was unfortunate at the end, but I think it's a huge step in the right direction.
It's mad. Just flicking through the morning emails and the Athletic, their headline today is Daily Football Briefing: Football's Addiction to Sleeping Pills, a Disease Spreading Quietly Across the Game. But Andrew Mobodelli is just so chilled out. It's like, oh yeah, I just had to. Well, I had to sleep, so I just slept.
I've got my Whoop app on, Johnny, and I'm not getting enough sleep, it turns out. That's that I'm an elite athlete, as plenty of commenters have pointed out on YouTube.
Very well mannered athlete.
Dressed like I'm going on a stag do in my own living room while I'm watching the football. I mean, it was a hot evening, what can I say? Fergus Keogh saying, no, that we read that already. Shifty lad, good morning to you. Nice to see you guys supporting the team through green colours. Nice few finds with players, in my opinion. Serbia probably better than Portugal. That's a fair enough point.
Yeah, they were.
On the night, anyway.
They were. They had much more fluidity to their play. Like, Portugal were poor against us. They looked like a team that was half thrown together. Serbia played, like, their interplay, they were an absolute joy to watch, I have to say. And it was great to be at a football game again, watching that calibre of football.
Yeah, well, again, like, Portugal, and your man was desperate against Portugal for 88 minutes and then does what he does.
Like, Bruno Fernandes, apart from the penalty, like, was he even on the pitch when he was taken off? I was like, where have you been? And Portugal, the one thing about that display, I think, that we probably got a little bit carried away on was the fact that Portugal were very, very poor at times. Mm. Serbia were not.
Brian Carey says, Kenny's building something for the future, playing the young lads. Judge him after Euro 2024 qualifying. Davey B, the fans that go to the games are fully behind him. Don't care what the rest think, to be honest. Will says, the last 50 minutes against Serbia was the most positive that I've seen. But again, it didn't really follow the neat passing. Lots of movement model that Kenny is meant to bring us. And look, that's a fair enough point, and it's a fair enough question to ask. And you'd certainly like to see some progression from it. My point is that when you see Jeff Hendrick showing flashes last night of what he can do in midfield, you know, we don't need a huge amount more players to help, I think, unlock more of that type of play. We do need somebody that can do it on a more consistent level, it has to be said, than Jeff Hendrick. I don't mind saying that, although it feels harsh to be critical of a guy who probably won one of his best best games in an Irish shirt last night.
Another thing as well, like that, let's be pragmatic here. You know, everyone can't play like Serbia or like Manchester City, and we do need a bit of a plan B as well, in terms of like putting balls into the box and being good at set pieces and putting flailing defences under pressure like we did in the last few games. We shouldn't be losing that either, because we are quite effective at that stuff, and we were very dangerous from corners in the last 5-10 minutes. They looked like they were basically on the ropes, and I've no issue with Shane Duffy scoring headers for Ireland. I've no issue with balls going in off the backside of players. It's just getting the rest of the little pretty stuff to deliver chances like it did in Portugal. I think Portugal was a good sign of how effective that can be. But we're maybe finding it a bit harder at home in home games where, you know, when we are on the front foot against a mass defence, it's a bit more difficult. But I think it does take time. And Ogbeni, I do feel, was definitely one player that we could badly have done with, and he wasn't there.
I go to Ireland games regularly, not last night, as I miss it on nights this week, so I have the kids, and I want Kenny to succeed, says this texter, but this deference and don't care about results for now is cat. So no patience, wants Ireland to succeed, but no patience to wait for it. And look at it, you're a paying punter, you're absolutely entitled to your view, and there's been plenty of them coming into us this morning, plenty of them on the witty side, and plenty of them quite serious, and plenty of people, look, people are passionate and they care about the position of Irish football, and that's probably the starting point. One note to leave this on before we move on is our flash poll. It's available up on the OTB social pages right now. What are your thoughts on the Stephen Kenny era so far this morning? Let us know. Here's our poll that's running, and it's going to run for the next 2 hours. Give Stephen Kenny a new contract. 73% of people said do it, and 27% say it's just not working.
That's very interesting. You know, you look at Stephen Kenny's record for Ireland is absolutely atrocious. No getting away from that. We beat Andorra, who, you know, I mean, that's neither here nor there. We haven't won a game. As that texter said earlier, we're in a serious, serious battle to finish ahead of Luxembourg in the group. We're 1 point ahead of Azerbaijan, and yet 3/4 of the people see the bigger picture.
Yeah, and Brian Duffy says, could you add an option that says fully assess when the campaign is over? And I'm absolutely with that. And I know that there'll be a whole pile of people that even when the campaign is over, and if we have a similar sort of run of games or performances that we've had over the last three, you know, there'll be a whole pile of people that will say Kenny still needs to be given time. And I have a lot of sympathy, I have to say, for that argument.
As well as that, we saw the banner behind the goal last night, and Kenny, yeah, we trust or whatever. Now, like, this is not a particularly impressive banner. You think of going to games around Europe and, you know, the amazing artwork and all that. This is something that, like, it looked kind of like they were on the way up and they happened to have a bed sheet in the back of the van. They were like, sure, we'll do this. And effectively, it'll be on. And straight away, like, I think during the anthems or when the teams come out, it was on, like, the big screen, and they got it in past security and all that. So it was like, you know, you just needed one little banner. But I do think that section of the crowd behind the goal, they were seriously, seriously behind Ireland. And I did read Jonathan Hill's comments in the match programme, which I think were interesting. He was basically speaking about the bigger picture. There was no mention, obviously, of management, but it was like he spoke about the mistakes of the past, and he spoke about the fact that we're in a better place now than we were, the vision we have over the strategic plan, and all these nice words. But it does seem that, you know, this is kind of a new start, and that they're not necessarily, and I know Daniel has been writing about this in terms of Kenny's kind of place in the board, but it is more about sort of the future, and like it's an organisation strapped for cash, and maybe they do think as well, like, Stephen Kenny actually deserves time because there is no quick fix, and Irish football has been in a very, very bad way off the pitch for a long time. We need proper football academies, we need our footballers getting a good education here, we need a good League of Ireland, and you know, I think we're taking baby steps.
Yeah, and I think the FAI will meet next, or is scheduled to meet next, about Stephen Kenny's future at the end of November, if I'm right. So there's a little bit of time to play with. And there's more games to come as well, obviously, between now and then. So that may tell a lot. Right, you are watching OTB AM, brought to you live every morning by Gillette. Good morning, start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. It is 13 minutes past 8 on this Wednesday morning. Delighted to have you along with us right here on OTB AM. A packed show still to come. Plenty more reaction this hour to that Ireland-Serbia game last night. We're going to talk Mayo Tyrone as well in the company of Anthony Moyles and Tommy Rooney a little bit later on. But up next, back after these, more football, Ger Gilroy and Dan McDonnell.
OTB AM.
Right, Ger and Dan standing by. Here's Stephen Kenny addressing speculation last night about his job and whether the FAI need to publicly address his future.
I've clear communication with you know, key people in the FAI, and they've been nothing but supportive. And I think it's irrelevant if someone writes something in the back of a newspaper or whatever, that, you know, and then it becomes... sidelined by that. I need to remain focused on the job in hand, because ultimately, players, you know, people have seen over the last week, they've seen some, you know, in the last few windows, some really talented players coming through. Yeah, the experienced players have shown in them a brilliant attitude. Listen, the 97-minute goal in Portugal, which would have been, you know, one of the great results, is our only defeat in six matches now. And but we haven't... we've been drawn too many. We need to start turning the draws into wins. And you know, so that's... we've got the two games next month, and then we've got Portugal coming here, and Luxembourg. So we've got Azerbaijan and Qatar. So they're good games, and a lot of good things from the week, really. But just you know, probably. Serbia overall could have deserved to win tonight. You know, they were exceptional, but we dug in, showed different type of qualities, and played a lot of good football as well, and had obviously two chances at the death to win it with Andrew's brilliant shot and Shane Duffy's header. But they were very good, I felt, Serbia overall.
Stephen Kenny giving his reaction to the media last night. Dan McDonald, Gerard Gilroy, good morning, lads.
How are you?
Morning.
Dan, what's your feeling listening to Stephen there and looking at the game last night, as to, and particularly taking the three games maybe in the round, as to the ongoing and never-ending debate as to whether Stephen Kenny's the right man or not?
I mean, it is the debate that never ends. I mean, I don't know. Like, I think, you know, my old take on it is, I think, you know, do you get the extreme of reactions after every game? And of course, like, you know, the thing about Saturday obviously was 72 hours after nearly beating Portugal with a pretty controlled performance, can you now suddenly declare that this regime is broken and everything is terrible? Of course not. But of course, can you watch last night and then sort of reach the view, well, this is proof that everything is wonderful? No, of course not. Like, you know, there has to be a sort of a degree of sort of happy middle ground sort of between it all. And in reality, like, my feeling after last night isn't madly dissimilar to what it would have been after Saturday, in the sense that this is still a work in progress. There's always a chance it was going to be that way. I think the fear, the most relevant thing about last night for me is that the team sort of, and the younger players in particular, did at least get to experience a bit of an exhilarating feeling at the Aviva, in the sense of, you know, a late goal where it's not a case that the full time story is they've just, you know, they've just suffered heartbreak, they've just lost a penalty shootout, you know, they've just maybe had chances and didn't take them. That they got that sort of rush and that buzz of the sort of the crowd being with them and cheering them off. And now it's a case of, okay, let's see where that momentum takes them. And let's see if that's just a little positive blip as such, in the sense, or let's see if actually that can actually infuse them with confidence, because this Kenny era and these games, it is a collective, and there's a massive focus from one game to the next, and there's a permanence around the results. Like the 1-1 against Serbia, whether deserved or not, and let's be honest, it wasn't deserved on the balance of play, but in, you know, in a month's time, it just goes down as a 1-1 in Serbia, just in the same way as some of the earlier results in the 15-16 games. Ireland actually did play quite well in some of those games, missed chances, but it's sort of forgotten because they weren't particularly memorable games. So there's a halfway house, like, between it all, and to me, the show goes on. But then the show wasn't going to stop. Like, this is the important point to make. The rumours of his imminent demise just weren't, they weren't in keeping with where things were actually is sitting, and there will be a judgment in time, and the last week just adds to that judgment.
Yeah, Gerry, you're not one for a halfway house. The battle for the soul of Irish football, as it was flagged up last night, a phrase familiar to you. What was your view on it last night? A step forward for those behind Stephen Kenny, or a battering?
Let me explain through the medium of one Twitter account. On Saturday evening, I got the following tweets. New contract now for Kenny. Do it tonight. Cry laughing, cry laughing, cry laughing, cry laughing. Sideways. Tongue stuck out, winky emoji. And then, new contract, my arse. Media will spin this shit too. They were both directly added me by a guy called John Ryan, who this morning slides into my DM saying, apologies if my comment offended you on Saturday, jerk. Give him a new contract, and this time it's not a joke. Played very well. It can he be trusted?
The battle is won, jerk. Is that what you're saying? That's it?
I mean, my work here is finished. I'm done. Look, I think everything that Dan said is 100% correct, right? There's no doubt that we are at the very start of a huge process, and it could go perilously wrong at any point. You know, we could have been hammered 5-1 by Portugal. We could have been hammered last night, but we weren't. And so every little bit, every little extra foothold that we gain, either through the quality of the young players that are coming through, or the quality of the coaching that becomes evident as time goes on, or the support of the crowd, or even the In Kenny We Trust banner, and even Johnny talking earlier on about the stand up for the boys in green with 15 minutes left to go. This is the building of something, right? And at any point, it can go horribly wrong. And in retrospect, we'll go, okay, well, that was the moment where it became clear that these weren't the right people to do this. But at the moment, it doesn't look like there's a credible alternative. It doesn't look like there's a way out of this, except for what the plan that the current management team has. And that's all we've said the whole way along. It's like, give the man the opportunity to do what he has to do and what he wants to do and what he's capable of doing. And if at that point he proves incapable of it, well, then move on and find somebody else to do it. But the structure of what he's trying to achieve is correct. We can't anymore rely on mediocre English journeymen to fluff out our team, because they won't want to play for us, first off. And secondly, what's the point of that?
Yeah, I'm not sure we've seen the end of the mediocre English journeyman, I have to say. That, I mean, particularly if you look at a position, if we get into the football conversation around it, and either of you jump in or this or Johnny, but the point that we've been discussing a bit earlier on about, like, looking at Jeff Hendrick last night, like, what in this country, right, when it, and bear with me on this one, when it rains, I think this is an absolutely fine country to live in, no problem whatsoever. When the sun is out, I think it's time to get out of here. I'd love to live somewhere where this happens all the time, and I feel exactly the same about Jeff Hendrick watching him last night. If we had one position, Stephen Kenny and his coaching ticket must leave this camp going. If there was one position that we could improve things on, it must be that. Now, there's no ready replacement, but anybody go with that, or what's our feeling about how one position where we could potentially unlock even more out of, for example, the likes of Adam Ida?
I think we've been good at creating midfielders over the years. Someone will come through. We probably need to see, like, Malumbi needs more game time. He needs to know, needs more discipline. Like, he's very young as well. So I'm absolutely not writing him off. Jeff Hendrick's performance, like, it's fairly stereotypical Ireland performance, right? 1 week, brilliant. In some games, brilliant. In some games, make some mistakes. But he's what we've got. And that's the joy of international football, is that these are the players. You got to dance with the one who brung you. So,
is there a different way to play then, Ger? Is that maybe the right question for either of you? But is there a different way to play to, like, everybody's raving about Adam Ida, right? But, like, he's not going to be, in that current role, the guy who's going to score you a goal every other game. And in that context, who is?
A goal every other game, Adrian, would be absolutely
sensational.
I'd be
delighted with that. Right.
Absolutely. To my point, 100%.
But you have, like, you do watch the game last night, and I'm fed up of watching Ireland games where, even against Georgia at home, games like that where we're basically outpassed. That shouldn't be the way. So you are, like, you're pining for these young players to come through, and the likes of Gavin Kilkenny, he may step forward. Scott Parker seems to be putting a lot of faith in him. It's that midfield player that we really are badly, badly missing. We've brought in obviously these players in the recent window that have had very little game time. Jamie McGrath, who was very, very tired last night but showed flashes. Josh Cullen, I thought, struggled last night. Brown didn't have a particularly good game by his standards. Horahan is kind of only coming back in. Malumbi, for me, has struggled so far at this level, and obviously at club level is really desperate to get game time now. And I think I'd be interested in Dan's view on this, Dan, what midfielders are coming up, because it is the one area where, like, I think our goalkeepers and our centre backs, and in general our defence, we have massive, massive potential in terms of that foundation for a team going forward. But the problems for Ireland often start when we play it out from the back four, because the midfield isn't necessarily there to pick up the ball.
Yeah, well, I think the problem is, like, there are certain things around international football that you can control to a point. But, I mean, Stephen Kenny's spoken about in the last couple of weeks that Ireland, for example, at the moment aren't blessed with attacking wingers really coming through the ranks. That's why he's putting a lot of stock on Ogbeni, who's playing in League One with Rotherham, has had an exceptional start to the season. But because you don't have those wingers, I think in his view, it probably makes the system that's being employed at the moment more of an option in the longer run, because, say, the alternative to that sort of 3-4-3 is to say like a 4-2-3-1 that Kenny often would have played with Dundalk, say, but that does rely on sort of width, and they would have Daryl Horgan again, and there are wingers in the squad, but not necessarily maybe, you know, Premier League options. And I think midfield is sort of one of those areas where Ireland have a lot of players without, you know, you can use these terms, but like Ireland have a lot of midfielders, a glut of players who'd be like number eights, I guess, you know, and they don't have that number 10, which I think is going to be a real issue in the games against Azerbaijan and Luxembourg. And as that has proved to be the case in those games where you're sort of hoping to dominate the ball and dominate the opposition. And they also don't have, say, that top class holding midfielder, the number six, who can sort of receive the ball comfortably and turn and bring, you know, get things going the other way. I mean, it's a sort of a gallows humour joke, but I mean, Rice and Grealish are exactly the two type of players that Ireland don't actually have. But I mean, you know, that's what happens. Like, if we have to find a way to like produce our own players. And I'm always wary of like dropping in names into the mix, because if anything, I know Johnny, you'll reference guys are playing well in the 21s. And understandably so, but we've had that in the previous campaign when Kenny listing off under 21 players, assuming, well, we can't wait till they come through. And it's difficult, it's hard, it's really hard when you get to senior football, and you can watch the under 21s, for example, last Friday play Bosnia, really encouraging, but they're basically playing in a training ground, you know, the game. It's a big difference from that to playing in front of 25,000 people. And indeed every week with their clubs now.
But we've never been at a better time, Dan, for like recent evidence of some of the players that were playing last night who've come through exactly that route. We weren't sure about them and suddenly here they are.
Yeah, and as I said, the good thing about last night is that the best players, or some of the best players on the pitch, are the younger players, without a doubt. And they've been given opportunities over the last couple of months. I mean, there's a... Like, the thing about the whole broader debate is that there can be a sort of a, and this is it is, as someone said, it's a bit like Brexit or whatever you want to call it. Like, people will just sometimes hone in on the line of argument that suits their position and follow it steadfastly, no matter what the evidence suggests. So it's all about the result. The result is the bottom line. Don't mind me those stats or whatever. And then obviously Ireland got a lucky result. It's like, well, they were lucky. You know, the stats show they were lucky. Like, you have to sort of somehow try and find somewhere in between. But I think for me, like, this attempt now to suggest that any other manager would have played those younger players, I mean, that's just not true. Like, it's definitely not the case. I think it's very possible that other managers employed in the past who would be wary of putting young players into this position and throwing them in there, they probably last night would have had, with that personnel, might have had John Egan on the right of the back three, Kieran Clarke in playing on the left. You know, like, I'm not so 100% sure you'd have Emoa Badeli in there. You know, similarly with Gavin Bazunu, and I think something that has been vindicated is the faith in Bazunu. You know, there's a suggestion over the last week that some big issue was that Darren Randolph should have been in as the third choice goalkeeper. Now, I think really Randolph has been an amazing servant for Ireland, but I think the idea of going with Bazunu and Kelleher is clearly the right one. So there are things that you can accept are positive changes where I think management can take some credit. The flip side is he's really putting his faith in some of the younger attacking players without necessarily having outstanding alternative options, but maybe on Saturday went too far that way in terms of Azerbaijan and didn't necessarily get the timing right. And there is something maybe in a way of Emoa Badeli playing next to Shane Duffy and getting that sort of with Matt Doherty the other side and integrating players with some of the older players around and striking that balance right. And that's part of the, you know, negotiating the roadmap forward in a way that you learn from it and progress together in a coherent way that delivers over the longer term.
Yeah. And Johnny, you were obviously at the game last night and we have our poll running, and it seems like that culture war, it's 75% of our audience this morning are behind Stephen Kenny, and I think, in fact, it might have been praised about giving him a new contract, which I'm sure is a bit of an alien concept to the other 27% who are saying that this thing has come to an end. And Johnny Gerr was talking about the atmosphere earlier on. But that's important, isn't it? Like that the 25,000 people leave there last night. They're buzzing. We could have scored a screamer from 35 yards out towards the end to, I mean, ridiculously snatch the game. But that should not be underestimated.
We were reading during the week about how the FAI is in crisis and is thinking about getting rid of Stephen Kenny, because one of the big issues is that they don't have a sponsor at the moment, and it's £2.5 million. And what are they going to do? Where are they going to find the money? Well, I think everybody can get behind what they saw last night. And I think as Dan pointed out, the whole point about the sponsorship is because the previous era was very closely connected to the sponsor at the time. And, you know, things have moved on. We all know exactly what happened. The next sponsor who comes in is going to find an Ireland team that represents the best of what the future looks like. It's going to represent a team that is homegrown, that has come through the system, that understands what it's like to come through hardship and suffer, and is going to build on that. And I can already see in the last couple of weeks, the FAI are drip feeding out new deals or renewals of deals with big brands. And I would expect that there will be big announcements with big brands over the next coming weeks as well. Like, I think anybody, if you just step back and stop getting involved in the Brexit, he said, she said, they're wrong, we're wrong, you're attached to that guy, we're attached to this guy. Irish football has been in a state of crisis going back decades because of mismanagement. It looks like we have the underage structures, not perfect, but producing some players who are capable of playing a style of football that people want to watch. It's going to be a while before that group of players actually make it to the senior team. We're in that process at the moment, and we can either decide to follow the work that has been done, creating more technical players who are comfortable on the ball, or it seems we can exclusively focus on international results by hoofing the ball forward to the big man, creating pressure high up the pitch. I don't know if you were watching Clinton Morrison on TV last night, but like, you can talk well and good to play out well, but what the Irish crowd really love is somebody running down the channels and winning a throw-in. That's what gets the crowd going. We've been there, and it's like, it's not anymore. It really isn't. No one is going to pay £60 or £100 to go and watch Ireland hoof the ball down the channels, because the game and the world has moved on. And we all sit in our TVs watching the Champions League, and we want good quality football. I'm not saying Stephen Kenny's the only one to do that, but that's what we have at the moment.
I think that really is the nail on the head. Like, it's been portrayed so long in many senses as this League of Ireland versus like Premier League fans divide on Stephen Kenny, when, like, I want to cut some slack here for the like people who do not go to League of Ireland games, just namely the majority of football fans in this country. I think there are an awful lot of purists out there who might follow Liverpool, might follow Manchester United, might follow Spurs. And I speak to an awful lot of friends of mine who are not necessarily League of Ireland fans, who are so behind Stephen Kenny and are so positive, even last night, about, you know, the young players coming through, because they became bored of watching Ireland play like that. And, you know, some people, you know, they want to go to their tournaments, they want to have the crack, they want us to win games playing whatever the best way possible. Most of the football fans in this country, whether they're League of Ireland fans, or they make the occasional trip to England, or they might have a passing interest in what goes on in this country, they want to see good football. And I really felt that in the crowd last night. I was looking around to see, like, do I recognise any of these people from League of Ireland games? Who's at the game here? What's the age kind of profile? And there was just a really good feeling, even when Ireland were passing the ball around at the back, often at their peril, there was very little in the way of hoof the ball. They really wanted to be behind this team. And I think most people in this country, as evinced by that poll, were probably just fed up with the way we were playing for the last while.
Johnny in the Stephen Ray with his little black book out. Dan, Damon Delaney was talking to Virgin Media last night about he said it was the worst performance of the Stephen Kenny era. That felt like a harsh oversimplification of things.
Ah, no, I mean, Luxembourg. I mean, Luxembourg was the worst. I think Luxembourg was bad. I think I vaguely recall Bulgaria last November being pretty bad. I wouldn't agree with that. But I mean, as I said, like, you know, you can be broadly positive about, you know, where things might go, and also accept that it wasn't a great performance. You know, I think, you know, they managed to come back off the ropes. And bizarrely, I mean, I did watch back sort of most of the second half last night. I mean, sort of sort of hilarious if the shot at the end from Mohamed Ali had gone in. Mm-hmm. It would have been one of the greatest Irish goals of all time.
And a fully deserved win as well.
Like, 30 seconds of passing. And as I pointed out, it reminded me a bit of, like, Ireland played Switzerland 2 years ago this month, with the David McGoldrick got that late header at the end. I mean, they were battered by Switzerland for large parts of that game. But it didn't matter because you get the rally, and in time it's just remembered as one of the good results that McCarthy got, or one of the decent results that he got. The details of the game fade into it. And this is the thing, like, Ireland's campaign won't be judged by that game against Serbia because they got out with the result. It's the mistakes they've made in other games that is the issue. But just to sort of half revert to something Johnny was saying there, like, I was pretty high up in the press box last night, which put me way closer to sort of fans than would normally be the case in terms of being able to hear it. And there was, for all that there was, like, great support, it seemed, behind the goal and other areas of the ground, it was sort of interesting during the match that there was some unease from some people as well too. Like, there was some people who weren't madly happy. Like, even before the goal, if you watch, going back to before the goal, the ball was played back to Bazunu, I think by Malumbi, and you can actually get some murmurs of, like, unhappiness, and there was some, like, frustration creeping in with people during the second half. It wasn't 100% unanimous in one direction. We're with this. You could hear the shouts of some people who were just thinking, I mean, they need to be more direct at times, and sometimes, you know, that can be, the history can be rewritten by what happened. But, like, I think There is something interesting in the broader debate where it stands. Like, I agree with Johnny that the labelling, it's not just, like, it's all League of Ireland fans one way, and it's not. But there is something in the broader debate that probably does act in Stephen Kenny's favour, and this is part of the real decision making process about where this goes and what shapes it. Is that, again, it's not 100% everyone the same way. There are people out there in grassroots and coaching world who probably are not that impressed with what they've seen. But I think that there's a lot more riding on disappointment than just necessarily the results in the short term. You're talking about an FAI that's trying to rebuild confidence after years of messing. Sorry, Jared, I'll just say, and that. There's the desire for this to work, and I think that the image portrayed by the FAI after 1 year letting someone go is not something that I think tallies with where they're going at the moment, and which is why I actually don't think Stephen Kenny is under the threat. I'm pretty confident in this. I don't think he's under the threat that some people imagined, because there's a bigger picture to this situation, and it's not going to be shaped by the usual short-term noise around the international team that fades by the weekend. I think there's bigger considerations that would be used to judge this, and all the stuff about, well, getting the fans back into the stadium stuff, it's relevant, but it's actually not the driving force that's going to lead to the decisions that are made, and I think it's fanciful to portray it that way.
Ger, I think you're going to come in at that point. Just before you do, let me read you this quote here, because I'm interested to get your thoughts on it, from Eamon Dunphy in The Star this morning. Liam Brady's been asking the players, if the players bought into the manager, I don't think he can ask that anymore. The fans back Kenny, the players back him, now it's up to the FAI. Stop this nonsense of leaks that Kenny's job is on the line. The FAI have to back their man, and do so publicly, because Kenny is the manager Irish football needs.
It's funny, on that point specifically, pre-game, Stewie Byrne was on, obviously, on Off the Ball last night, and he was saying that he had read the same programme notes that Johnny referenced earlier and hadn't seen the implicit or explicit backing of the manager, even though there is a long-term view, and this new strategy document is due out in the next 3 months, and it talks about a long-term view. And I think that tallies. It would be much better if they were explicit and came out and said, look, the noise is completely a waste of all of our time. We should be talking about what happened on the pitch, and we should be talking about the great grassroots initiatives we have. But I think the point from that Dan makes on a corporate level, the FAI can't sack this manager now because it would be idiotic. It would be short term, shoot yourself in the foot. It's back to factional fighting, and it's back to having something that we have no control over, and we have no succession plan. Like, what they should be doing is saying, Stephen Kenny's going to be our manager for as long as he's successful, and after that, we're going to have a new manager who's going to come from within our ranks. And if you want to be the Ireland manager, you've got to be working with one of our underage teams. Fairly straightforward. It's what most football associations all around the world do. And it has this kind of immediate impact of going, okay, right, well, the underage teams are hugely important and they need to play in a similar style to the senior teams. I think, Dan, the other point that you made on Twitter during the week was about the texter in Off the Ball who called Stephen Kenny an amateur. And you made the point that this is the reason why so many people want Kenny to succeed. It's because if Kenny doesn't succeed and if the result is that we look outside the Irish football industry for our next international manager, it's a massive knock on that whole industry. It kind of means that everybody's wasting their time. It kind of means that those grassroots coaches, that those coaches in the League of Ireland, that anybody who's working in the academy, that anybody's driving kids from Mayo to training in Dublin to see if they might be able to make it. Like so many of the Irish players have come through that system, that you're wasting your time in those car journeys and washing those jerseys and thinking about what the lineup is going to be at that weekend. And we can't have that. We absolutely need a system that makes sense from the top to the bottom. Otherwise, the sport is completely screwed. It's in competition with the GAA. It's in competition with the Premier League. It's in competition with TV. It's in competition with the best computer games that we've ever seen. It's in competition with a million different things. And unless there is a coherent plan to get kids out playing football in a style that's going to make them successful and make the team look good, there's no plan. And getting in an English manager or an international manager is a short-term solution that has not worked over the last two decades. And that's my two cents.
Mm. Yeah, well, I think the point I made the other day about the texter is, again, this is possibly more relevant to the point of it's not just the case of the League of Ireland fans feel this way, but there are certainly, I've spoken to people, I suppose, you know, younger League of Ireland managers and people coming up through the ranks who they really want Stephen to do well because they would be aware that there would be, you know, large sections of the country which they live in who, as I said, don't think that they're involved in almost in real football. You know, that there are these islands that exist and there's international level which comes from England and then there's people who work in the game here, and there's no link between the two. Now, of course, we know that all our best players will aspire to go away. Of course, all our best coaches, you know, ambitious ones will too. But there's almost a sense, and I think this is where at the root of some of the sort of tensions that exist, that people probably get more entrenched in their views when they hear that some people, like if people have decided from the start this isn't going to work because he's a League of Ireland manager, and that's it. Like, that's just that was it. This assumption, well, because he is, I'm just going to conclude that the players don't respect him. Like, I have nothing to bring to this debate. I have no knowledge to back this up. But clearly, with his background, players just don't respect him, and that's it. Which is actually a bit unfair to the players, too, because most of our players now come from a slightly different background to even, say, the Brian Kerr dressing room, where he would have encountered maybe a team more so of recognisable Premier League stars and might have suffered a couple of issues from a couple of players in that regard. I don't think Stephen Kenny, I think without a shadow of a doubt from everything I've heard, the players were open-minded to Stephen Kenny. Doesn't mean it works, but I don't think it's a case that they're sitting there going, well, who is this guy? What's his CV? But there are like a section of people out there who, until Stephen Kenny is successful, will keep making points like, well, he got sacked by Dunfermline 13 years ago. You know, as though it's
wow, what a brilliant argument! Yeah.
Like I'm not, you know, like, you know, Maurizio Sarri got sacked by teams in lower league Italy on the way up the ranks. He was working on a bank at some stage. Like, you know, people have a different journey in coaching that isn't quite the straight line and that you might have as a player. So like, it's just not relevant.
It's names as well, Dan. Like, do you think the players were? Do you think they were overly impressed by Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane, like throwing jerseys at you 10 minutes before the kickoff?
You can always find something that suits your argument, right? You know, and like, there's no doubt that I think just by the end, the O'Neill thing, it works for a while, but you saw, wasn't it, Matt Doherty wasn't, you know, was dismissive enough of sort of the input of Roy Keane, for example. I think, he got in trouble for that. But you have a window in which to, like, impress the players, and then, of course, you'll be judged by the quality of the work on the training ground. And it does seem that certainly the summer camp and again Anthony Barry and the staff and all that is very important, and like, you know, these are all the elements of the setup. It's not as straight line as the manager inspiring them with the team talk. And what the environment is like around the place. But I what I would say is, though, like, part of it is understandable to a degree. I may find some of the views offensive that are expressed, but like football exploded in this country. Really, as much as there was always a massive passion for football that was there, you look through the history books, but it really like went out there in the golden era, you know, at a time when the League of Ireland here was very, very part-time, not treated seriously from above. And we know this. We know that the presumption would be that we could continue to operate the way that we were going by relying on English football to do all the work for us. And for a lot of people, that's hardened and cemented a view of what football in this country represents and what it can strive to be. And for them, they don't view the League of Ireland on the same plane as football anywhere else in the world. They just assume, like, you know, but the reality of where we're going is very different to that. And I think that's the frustration that comes from maybe some people who realize you do not realize how important getting the league right is for where we're going in the future. And like, there's people, but the national team is box office. Like, some people, you know, high enough profile pundits, I'd never even heard of Jamie McGrath before. You know, this is how the international team is very different.
And Jared's brought their point, Dan.
Yeah.
Like, where he's like, we have all of these underage teams in the League of Ireland that have been brought in. And in fairness to the FAI, and it was during John Delaney's reign, they brought in the underage League of Ireland structures, which meant that you'd have all these young coaches. So as well as having, we'll say, Rory Higgins, who's come from the Ireland set up, Stephen O'Donnell, who's played under Kenny at Dundalk, Stephen Bradley at Shamrock Rovers, we'll say Tim Clancy at Drogheda United, all these young managers. You've a scatter of underage managers who are starting at underage teams in the League of Ireland. You've all these coaches, a lot of whom are doing their badges with, you know, top managers from England who are doing their badges with them, and there are a lot of ideas coming through in the League of Ireland that'll be different to Stephen Kenny's. There's a lot of an evolution going on in coaching in this country, and they're completely behind the ideas that the manager can come from this country, not somebody who's just thrown in from England and given a load of money to get us a result in the next game.
We're going to wrap it up, Dan. Go on briefly.
You know, I was just going to say, I wouldn't necessarily agree with Jerry's sort of theory that the next manager just has to come from that setup. I don't think you can limit yourself to that too. You should always be open-minded to what's out there. You know, you could have an ex sort of international doing really good things in the UK. There's a balance to be found between the two worlds. But I think it's more
I'm not saying it's a strict rule, but in an ideal world, so John O'Shea is involved with the underage teams and the underage setups, and that's somebody who has a connection.
No, I get that.
But
I guess the sense, though, I think the point is that, like, even when Jonathan Hill came in, there was a sense of, well, this new CEO was going to come in and change, and like, you kind of wonder, are people wishing this or knowing this? Probably more so to the former, he's going to change it. But like, the optics of the English CEO coming in and saying, you need to get rid of this guy and bring in our established manager from overseas, I don't think that's going to be a good look when there's absolutely zero guarantee of success. And that's why that line of thinking, as I said, it's Delaney era FAI thinking, and I don't think that's going to reflect what will actually happen going forward, regardless of what the debates will rage on. I think he's going to get more time, Kenny, to be honest.
I think when we've Johnny Ward saying, starting a sentence with, in fairness to John Delaney, it's definitely a time to wrap up this debate.
That's very harsh now.
Thanks, I mean, million.
You just threw me out totally out of context there.
Thanks, William. Plenty of comments coming into us, by the way, and we'll continue to bring those to you over the course of the morning. Right now, here's a bit of a sense of what's happening across the back pages for you this morning, including up on otbsports.com on 8:45, or just gone it today. Kenny says that nothing but support. Kenny says FAI, nothing but supportive, as he shuts out noise over future. Also, a 9 positive and negative article just up in the last couple of minutes in this international window for you to get your teeth into, and plenty more reaction from the Aviva Stadium last night as well. Here's what's happening across the back pages for you. Disturbed, says the Irish Star this morning, with a shot of John Egan and Shane Duffy. Pretty spectacularly joyous after that.
If you are
jammiest of OGs,
like, I am thinking, and I'm like one of these readers of the Irish Times who absolutely loves that article, New to the Parish, where somebody comes in from Syria or wherever and says, Irish people are really friendly, they're great, they've welcomed me, and you're just a great bunch of lads. I always think, like, what the opposition players feel when they leave Lansdowne Road. The Serbs must have been absolutely sick.
Because
you're just looking at it and the place is going bananas. We haven't had a kick really for about 70 minutes.
Well, they leave it thinking that goalkeeper is that goalkeeper
is amazing.
Did that's what they've left. It was 10 shots to 2 on target, something like that. So
yeah.
The fact that we've got 2, I was looking at the stats last night, was somewhat of a surprise to me. Harrington says that Leona is one of the greats, and no great surprise about that. That's written inside there. Magnificent Bazunu helps Ireland to a battling draw, by the way, and that's very much the tone of the coverage across the papers. This is the Mirror. Deserved our luck, and they've gone with the same pun there. Kenny hopes fortunate point will give young stars belief for the future campaigns as playoff hope dies. Ron has first run out back at Red Devils. That's your man with the United gear on him. Elsewhere on the Irish papers, we have the Irish Daily Mail. Hope at last. Philip Quinn's thoughts inside. Kenny hails young guns as Ireland snatch draw. O'Dwyer to take on Cork as McCarthy era ends. This is Ronan O'Dwyer having left the Cork footballers, and Bobby O'Dwyer looks likely to come into that position there. Lots of All-Ireland build-up as well across all the papers this morning. The Irish Sun, justice is served. They're all going with that one. Late OG, Hans Kenny, a result. Neil O'Riordan, somewhat positive inside there. Chris up and running, also there. And that, the Herald, Burke, I want to be the Kildare boss. This is the news that Kildare are to appoint a consultant to find out who the replacement for Jack O'Connor is going to be after his announcement that he was leaving during the week. But Davy Burke, who's coming from Wicklow and has managed in the Kildare Championship, seems to be a hot favourite there. And making a point is the reflections of the football there. I might just grab a couple of these, Johnny, there. The Irish Independent, it's got on the front page a picture of the football last night of Jubilant Shane Duffy. And then on the back, really the story of the night, Gavin Bazunu with a save from his legs there, making a point there. Maguire Salam, heroic, set to inspire revival of women's Irish Open. This is an exclusive from Brian Keogh inside. And that news from Colm Keyes there, that Kildare to appoint a consultant to find O'Connor successor as Burke declares interest. I'll leave you with the papers for now with the Irish Times, which is again a shot of the rough and tumble, I think it's fair enough to say, at the Aviva last night. John Egan, Shane Duffy and Collins, it looks like, in action there. Ireland show character to secure memorable point, writes Gavin Comiskey inside, and Mary Hannigan with the reflections as well from the TV and beyond. So that's what's happening there. You are watching OTB AM, brought to you by Gillette. Good mornings, start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. It is 8:50 on this Wednesday morning. And a very good morning to you, wherever it is you're at. We've loads of comments coming in reaction to the football last night. Most of them somewhat supportive of what went on. John Duggan, good morning to you.
Adrian and Johnny, how are we doing?
What camp are you in?
In the camp of a new haircut. You look young.
Looking sharp.
Well, we take 10 years off our life every time we watch Ireland and every time we get a haircut here. I'm in the camp. I said it last week in my column for OTB Sports. Give Stephen Kenny a new contract. Give him the certainty. Let's not have uncertainty about this. We're not entitled to get to World Cups and European Championships. It took us 60 years from 1930 to 1990 to get a World Cup. The rugby team hasn't reached a semi-final of the Rugby World Cup in 35 years in a competition which has 10 teams, realistically. Last night I enjoyed it. I thought the fans were absolutely fantastic. I was watching it at home. I kind of concurred with what Liam Brady and Richie Sadlier said. I thought they were even and level about what we saw. But at times we were composed. We passed the ball. I thought Jeff Hendrick played really well. First time I've seen him play as well in a long time. I thought McLean and Doherty were good on the wings. Bazunu obviously is playing out of his skin at the moment. 10 saves. And Omo Bamidele was almost like a Franz Beckenbauer in there at times in my mind as a 19-year-old.
Like that comparison.
Yeah. So I the issue here is goals. And that's why I can't say with certainty that when we go to Baku and when we go to Luxembourg that we'll have easy victories, because we can't score goals since Robbie Keane left the international setup. Under O'Neill and Roy Keane, in the last 4 games in the Nations League, they didn't score a goal. 7 goals in 8 games under Mick McCarthy in the qualifiers for the Euros. 1 goal in 8 games last year under Stephen Kenny. In the last 3 games, John Egan, Shane Duffy and an own goal. That's the problem we have against the weaker teams.
And the only against 2 things team, that can yeah. fix that will be either unearthing a couple of new players that can play off Ida or potentially changing the system. But the only way is that, outside of finding the next Robbie Keane, which ain't happening anytime soon, is to try and effect change in that way. And I don't know, it certainly looks like, I don't know if it's a hill that he's going to or wants to die on, but it doesn't look like, I know Dan was talking about 4-2-3-1 there. It doesn't look, John, like Kenny is overly minded to move away from the system he has in place.
But he has been flexible before. He was always a four at the back man, and he's gone three at the back now in the last few games. And the wing-backs did well last night, and maybe Anthony Barry's had an influence on that. But all this debate and all this noise about anti-Kenny and pro-Kenny and all that kind of thing, and some of the paper stuff and some of the commentary, I think has been a little bit on just factored in on one thing. Mm. And I've said on all the shows. Now, to be fair, I've seen a huge amount of negativity towards the management and towards Stephen Kenny from all the textures and people presenting shows all over the weekend. You can't ignore that. You can't also ignore one win in 16. Mm-hmm. And Andorra. And you also can't ignore sloppy mistakes. Like last night, we conceded from a set piece. Against Azerbaijan, we sat off their player and he scored. These are things that should be really not in the picture. It's just the basics. Mm. So you can definitely ask questions about it. But what else? What is the alternative? Vincent Hogan wrote a great piece today in the Irish Independent about it. This kind of idea of sandbagging and pragmatic play just to get the result, to get to the tournament. Think about it. How many great days have we had since Korea and Japan had major international tournaments? Possibly three. The Sweden game, the Italy game, which was a dead rubber for Italy, remember, and the France game. Three in 19 years. Because 2012 was a write-off. So I don't see an entitlement there, and I don't see us compare. Look at Serbia. In 2015, they won the under-20 World Cup. And Sergej Milinkovic-Savic played in that team. He scored last night. Dusan Tadic, the control, the technical skill that he had on the ball. Mitrovic, Vlahovic. Vlahovic is seen as a player that's worth a lot of money. Look at the players that we have at the moment. I thought we played well last night. I thought we played well in Portugal. And the reason why people are getting frustrated, we should be able to beat Luxembourg, we should be able to beat Azerbaijan. We can't score goals. That's the reason why we're falling down in that regard.
Yeah, and I don't think that debate is going anywhere soon. Virtual Insanity, John, what have you got?
This is Wentworth this week. This is the biggest tournament on the European Tour. The BMW PGA Championship starts at 20-7 tomorrow. It's also a huge week for the Ryder Cup because Patrick Harrington makes his three wildcard picks at the end of the week. This is a tournament which is all about horses for courses. I've seen it so many times at Wentworth. Luke Donald, Francesco Molinari, Angel Cabrera, who, if you read about Angel Cabrera, has had an interesting journey to prison in South America in the last while. But going back to the golf, Shane Lowry has an unbelievable record in this tournament, and he is a strong headline tip for me at 16-1 in the BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth this week. Think about it, right? He has been 8 times in top 15 at Wentworth in the last 10 years. Second, tied for fourth, and tied for sixth twice. He's been playing well this season. 6 top 25s in a row, played well at the Open, played well at the USPGA, has had a second child last week, so obviously happy with life. He's got a smile on his face coming into this week. He has a strong each-way recommendation this week at 16-1, Shane Lowry. The alternatives, the other ones, are the other three that I picked this week. Robert McIntyre is 45-1, and I've put a bit on him each way on otbsports.com and on the app, more of a rationale. But Robert McIntyre, a player I really like. I think he's one of the up-and-coming British players that's going to do something in the game. Tied for 12th of the Masters, tied for 8th of the Open, better than a lot of his peers. Was speaking to the Scotsman last week in the paper about just going out to win this tournament. And I think he's a player that's rapidly improving in the game, Robert McIntyre. And the other two I liked was Christian Boisvenhout from South Africa is a 30-1. And I picked him for, I think, 5 each way virtually. He was 3rd on the Korn Ferry Tour Championship to get his PGA Tour card for next season. So he's a huge amount of freedom after that. And he was 3rd in this event a couple of years ago. He's won 3 times in the European Tour. He's not afraid to win. And finally, Victor Perez was 2nd in this last year. A little bit of return to form for him. Tied 18th in Italy last week. Victor Perez, very good with his irons if he can get the ball on the fairway. He is 50-1. So Victor Perez, Christian Boisvenhout, Robert McIntyre is number 2. But the main man this week, a confident selection each way in Shane Lowry at Wentworth.
Good man. Love to hear it. Thanks, JD. And we'll keep a very close eye on that. And here's what's coming up on OTB Sports Radio today. At 1 o'clock, Chris Waddle, the subject of OTB Gold. It's Mount Rushmore. And what else could it be on the Wednesday of an All-Ireland final week? It's Mount Rushmore and it's Mayo in the hot seat, at least for now. Retro panel, Tyrone's GA's Golden Days at 4 o'clock. 6 o'clock, some OTB Gold, Gerlach Nan. Brilliant chat with Joe Malloy from a couple of years back, and then live on your radio from 7 is Off the Ball for this Wednesday night. We're going to bring you more reaction from the Aviva last night before 10. Up next, OTB AM right here. We're going to talk Gaelic football, and we're going to hear a little clip from the latest episode of the Football Pod, and Anthony Moyles will be with us as well. OTB
AM. I think Tyrone were looking to Like, Kerry's greatest strength was the forward line and looking to contain that. That was the fear. Not for, that was the, yeah, maybe fear is the right word. Tyrone knew they needed to shut that down. Mayo's forwards are not as good. And I think Tyrone are going to say, well, look, we can hurt them on the other side there. I feel they're not going to be as defensive. Like, Michael O'Neill playing there along with Frank Burns was a very set thing to try and stifle Kerry's attack and play. Yeah. I think they're going to be a bit braver in this regard. Not braver, but I think they'll see opportunities at the other end. And that's why they'll play. I feel they'll play with probably Bradley.
Does that it strikes me that style that they played against Kerry suited their type of player down to the ground. Like, you've got six players there in Burns, McGeary, Hart, Myler, Sludden, even Conor McKenna, the transition players that you spoke about so much, Paddy, in the build-up. I think you were talking beforehand that 2-7 of Tyrone's scores came from the transition. Would I be right in saying, Andy, that Mayo have a lot of transition players too? But they're slightly different. Are they slightly, like, are Tyrone's more of a counter-attacking style transition player, whereas Mayo's are just...
You're nearly looking at, like, that middle eight. You're nearly, bar the midfield section, the two guys in midfield, you're nearly looking at identical setups in terms of the player. Now, they play Burns more of a sweeper than Mayo will play any sweeper. We will try to create one maybe from the middle of the field and get Stephen Cohen to drop back into that pocket and see where it goes. But all the transition, Myler, Sludden, Paddy Durkin, Lee Keegan, whoever's out there, Stephen Cohen, they all nearly do the same job. It's like what Paddy says. Not many of them are going to be kicking. Now, like, the funny thing about the Mayo Tyrone League game last year is Tyrone kicked an awful lot of long ball. But Mayo were way more open at the back. Way more set this year, and I think it probably suits us a tiny bit more. So it's good, very unusual. I just clicked up there on the laptop here. I just clicked up actually the Donegal game.
Yeah.
And I think the only change from the Donegal game the last year was Michael McKernan started instead of Rory Brennan. Or Rory Brennan started against Donegal. Rory Brennan started and Michael McKernan didn't. So maybe this is their go-to team. Maybe me and Paddy might have just called that wrong. Maybe this is the set one. And I wouldn't say Donegal and Mayo are that dissimilar the way they're trying to play either. So maybe this is the go-to team. Maybe me and Paddy will call that wrong. But Mayo will try to...
Just don't be saying we're wrong already. The match hasn't even been on. If we're wrong, we can run next week and apologise. But at least come in with a degree of confidence that we know what we're talking about. Like,
Andy Moore hasn't been wrong many times this year, I'll put it that
way.
He's a wily old fox. Look at him.
Yeah, I called
Jenny's telling him all the stuff in the background.
I'm trying to study it from Jenny. We called a big call there. Yeah, looking at the teams, it might be the same. But either way, right, how are Mayo going to get an advantage here? Right? Sludden is going to try to nail Mayo's midfield with his kick-off. Absolutely, without
Morgan.
Question. Even if he fails on five, or Morgan, sorry. Even if he fails on five or six of them kickouts, he's going to try it two or three times because the reward will outweigh Mayo winning a couple of breaks there if they have one or two. But Mayo's big advantage here, lads, is in the middle of the field. Make no doubt about it. There's two forwards playing there in the middle of the field. So we play Loftus, Dermot O'Connor with Matty Ryan. Matty Ryan, natural midfielder. The other two guys are half forwards. So they can be elusive. They're in around the fringes, running Kilpatrick, running Kelly, and just kind of really getting at them in that little kind of, you'd nearly call it the number 10 space between midfield and striker if you're.
I think that's an advantage to Mayo, most certainly. I think they're so even nearly everywhere else around the pitch. You say the goalkeepers the whole way up. I think Mayo could have an advantage there. The only thing I was thinking with Dermot O'Connor, would Dermot O'Connor go on McGeary, no?
I think the way Tyrone will play McGeary, as I said, I think they'll play McGeary like we played Paddy Durkin a couple of years ago. They'll play him, they'll put him on somebody. So they could
on
put
Durkin,
him
on, perhaps, no?
They could put him on a Durkin or they could put him on a Hessian.
I would have thought Durkin would go on Peter Hart, no?
And that's what I'd be imagining. That's the whole way I kind of do it. But they're going to be, like, Paddy, you know yourself, this, everyone would want to mark their own man.
And I think it was Jim McGuinness said it. This is me agreeing with Jim McGuinness again. Tyrone are so hard to pick up. Like, I remember when we used to prepare to play Tyrone, they just go everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, it's not set. That's this. Their whole game is transition. So it's very difficult to try and definitively say he's going to pick him up because they literally go everywhere. That's why I think Matty Donnelly starts on Jason Foley the last day, but then he starts coming out around the middle of the pitch and Kerry are kind of looking, going, what's the story here? McGeary all of a sudden gets 40 possessions, going, who the who the hell is marking this guy? And they're just so elusive in their movements. But I questioned Kerry in terms of allowing the Tyrone middle third to have the influence on the game they had the last day. For McGeary to get 40-odd possessions, for Matty Donnelly, even though it didn't really impact the game, the score sheet, and Peter Hart, the three of those guys were controlling the game. If you're James Horan, you've got to be looking and going. McGeary has been arguably Tyrone's best player this year. Someone has to mark him. You know, we praised Conor Moyler did the job on Paddy Clifford. Who are Mayo? And Mayo have the players who
can
do that.
Can you mark a McGeary?
Yeah, he's so important in their transition. Look at Clifford. Look at Paddy Clifford.
But how do you mark someone like Kieran McGeary when he's trying to play between the lines?
Go back to Ryan.
Someone man to mark him.
It's like what we were saying, Ryan McHugh. Ryan McHugh knows the problem.
Follow him everywhere.
Because everyone knows marks him. And he wants, like, the way he defends in good positions and then he attacks. So you can mark him, but you're releasing a defender to mark him. When you release a defender to mark him, you leave space behind you. And that's the danger.
But tell me, you're saying how do you mark someone like McGeary? And Andy, you hit the nail on the head when we were praising Myler last week. Someone's got to sacrifice their game. Mm. Someone's going to say, I might not have 20 possessions in this entire match, but I tell you what, he's only got to touch the ball 5 times. Mm. And anytime he gets it, I'm going to absolutely bury him. And the only thing he's going to do is hand pass it back 5 yards. Like Dermot O'Connor has the influence, has the athletic capability to do that. I'd say he's arguably one of your fittest players, Andy. But does James Horan turn around and say, well, Dermot O'Connor, particularly around the middle, gives us something a bit more in an attacking sense. He can get up and kick those lovely outside of the right foot points, 2 or 3 points.
I think he'll have to. I don't think he's going to be the one. I don't think he can be the one, because I think he is going to be, if we're going to get enough scores to win this game, I do think he's going to get into positions, because Kilpatrick and Kennedy, if they do start, which I'd have my doubts, if they do start, the two of them, they are the little angles. You can get space off midfielders. You can always get space off midfielders, because the midfielder essentially wants to catch and link play. That's what they're doing, you know?
As you're talking there, I'm really believing that one of those two may not start at the weekend. It just seems that Tyrone were set up so perfectly to take down Kerry that they're going to change it up, because Mayo were such a different proposition. The way they attack, the way they play, completely different style of football. So I think there could be changes. Very interesting. I'd love to see Darragh Canavan start. I think I think he adds something completely different for that Mayo defence to deal with. He's electric.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think he troubled our defenders. He's elusive.
He hasn't started a game on championship.
I think
it's a big ask to do it now. I think.
He played well against Mayo in the league a couple of years ago, right?
Yeah, last year when they were down. But now that game was a gale force win. So basically, Tyrone dominated the first half, and Mayo dominated the second half, because it was just a gale in McHale Park. You played a few of them, Paddy. They're not. It's a nightmare. It's freezing. It's blowing straight down the pitch, and it's just.
This was July or August, was it?
Yeah, the middle. You never come out of Dublin once April.
I have never not been in McHale Park where it's not a bloody hurricane, and the grass is long, and it's wasn't for me.
But it was one of those days, and it was just. And Canavan and Conor McKenna played very, very well together. Mm. And it was just. I do agree with that. It would be a tough ask for him, but he could go in there and do 40 minutes. I'm hoping he doesn't.
The way Mayo play and the first half of this game, this has got to be beyond frantic. My own experience playing against Mayo All-Ireland final games, there's no space. It's flat out. I don't think that necessarily suits Canavan's game.
Okay.
And I think it's a big risk for. I think they're wasting a trump card off the bench by playing him from the start.
There's a bit of a Costello in 2017.
We always had it with Kevin Mack, was obviously our most infamous person coming off the bench. And there's absolutely times where he was electric coming in. You think that fella has to start.
Yeah.
But he just had something. He was an X factor off the bench. And when space opened up, there was no one better. His style of play suited space, which wasn't always there in the first half of games, particularly against Mayo. And I could see Canavan in the exact same way. If McShane was at his absolute peak, I'd start him. And I think if anyone's likely, he could play, but
okay.
I just don't think he's as sharp, despite his scoring exploits the last day. I think the last 20 minutes is the time for him. I think you'll see him around the 50-minute mark when things start to open up a bit.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. That's episode 18 of the Football Pod. It's really absolutely flown this season. That was Paddy Andrews and Andy Moore, and obviously with Tommy Rooney, who's going to join me now. And the Football Pod's available exclusively right now on the OTB Sports app. Later today, you'll be able to get the Football Pod everywhere else. And make sure to listen before Saturday's All-Ireland final. But obviously, with Anthony Moyles and Tommy Rooney here, we're going to talk about Mead. And lads, I was just looking up Twitter on Sunday. Barry Geraghty, David Jennings from the Racing family over at Croke Park with their family, everyone cheering. And I don't know, 600,000 odd people watching on TV. I wasn't the lads, maybe back in the glory days, but you must have gotten a great kick out of what the ladies did, particularly coming from the background that they have. They're massive underdogs as well to beat the Dubs.
Moisey, I think yeah. That's on you to jump in there.
Yeah. This is basically a royal love-in for the next 10 minutes. We're barely going to mention Tyrone or Mayo, Miles.
We're not going near it.
That's okay. Jesus, if I'd known that, I would have prepared. I would have been decked out. I went in actually with my... I've two girls, a 4 and a 6-year-old, and it was my first experience being in Croke Park with them. So I got over the fact that we had about 400,000 questions already by the time we were actually sitting in the seats. And the line of questioning continued to, who are we supporting again? Which colour is that? Why did she do that? Why are you clapping? So, and it was an experience, but the hot dogs kind of calmed that down a little bit. It was fantastic, I have to say. It actually, it was a little bit emotional at the end because I think it showed just how starved Meath people are for... success and something to cheer about. And
exactly what I was thinking, actually, looking at those pictures.
Yeah, well, listening to what you lads were chatting about, obviously about the soccer and the, everything else. It's, I think Irish people by their nature, I suppose there is a little thing of, if we're being dealt a bad hand, we'll just take it. And, we'll kind of try to find a little bit of kind of gallows humour in it a little bit, but then obviously when something comes along that actually really makes us stand up and appreciate it and kind of go out of ourselves, I suppose, and maybe get a little bit cocky and stick our chest out a bit, it can be quite emotional. And I think, it's been a long time for Mead people, and obviously the last couple of weeks has been a great success with the minor teams as well. So, it was really, really, really excellent. I think obviously the fact that they were given no chance at all, and Dublin were red hot favourites. And I was trying to think about it. I'm quite contrarian sometimes, and I was trying to think prior to the game, are there pockets and are there kind of areas that they can really try to exploit Dublin? And to be honest with you, I didn't really see it coming, the win, not in the manner that they did, because they essentially controlled the game. They kind of did what Tyrone did to Kerry, the previous week, in that they protected the D and they just, managed to kind of turn over Dublin at vital times. And they got some excellent scores. They have a lot of really, really good young kind of energetic players, and they've got lots and lots of bags full of skill. And it's an amazing story, Johnny, to think that the fact that they were trying so hard to get out of intermediate, and eventually they got out last year, and then to straight away go and win the senior. I suppose the fact is there could be lessons there, and I think there's a lot of lessons in the female game for the men's game. And one of them is that fact that, when you're trying to get out of a division, be it junior or intermediate, it's always quite difficult because someone is obviously coming down, and that team coming down, they may have just had a bad year for one reason or another. It could be that some girls went off to play, in Australia. It might be that some girls took time off for career or whatever it is. So you're always pitching against those two or three top teams. And Mead found that in the last number of years. But when they eventually broke through, they were rightly set to have a really good run at that senior championship, and there's a lot to be said for it. We talk about
Jesus, championship structures every year, second tier, third tier, will you do a B All Ireland? And I think there's loads to be said for that. And I think the ladies' game just bears that out.
Absolutely. And Tommy, there's something special as well. Like I still get goosebumps thinking back to watching back when Galway won the All Ireland, beat Watford, and Marty Morrissey's the ball is about to be the final sideline puck of the game. And Marty Morrissey says, "Is the wait over? It's over." And the place goes mad. And you could sense that in me, just this starved kind of, you know, starved of success and this outpouring of emotion and relief at the final whistle. But imagine if Mayo beat Tyrone.
Well, that's exactly it. And I think what Anthony is saying there about the pride, I suppose, being back and being able to stick the chest out, like there has been a bit of energy in Meath sport, would say, over the last couple of weeks. You had the two minor wins and we were talking a bit about that, and then as Anthony, like the story of that Meath women's team is just unbelievable. And I just think it can't be underestimated as well, Anthony. They played in Croke Park in December and they won that Intermediate All-Ireland. They won Division 2. That momentum of the last couple of months was powerful and it carried them through. Johnny, you're spot on. If either of the teams win at the weekend, it's going to be a great story. And it's so hard to call it, I think, because there is no clear favourite. It's so difficult to call it this weekend. It's like, how can you call between them? Like nobody's been preparing for this. We were getting ready for a Dublin-Kerry final all year long. It's all anyone was talking about. It's all anyone expected, that maybe Kerry would be the ones that would be good enough to take down Dublin this year. Mayo did that job, and Kerry fell short again against Tyrone. So, like, it's fascinating this weekend. Like,
it is, and you could just, like, Kevin McStay has had some absolutely superb articles in the Irish Times over the last month or so. But I'm reading, like, I only go to the headline yesterday, and he's tipping Mayo to win, and you're just like, how can he even return to these county? Because if they don't win now, it'll be like, sure, Kevin McStay tipped us and choose this, sure, he was writing us the script for us to lose, like. But, you know, they really should win, should they not? The young legs that they have, pound for pound, probably better footballers than Tyrone, or is this another trap to be set by you know, this brilliantly, I suppose, resolute team from the north?
I'll let Anthony jump in here in a second, but I don't know if that's correct. I think it's very, very close. I think that Tyrone were perfectly set to ambush Kerry, the type of players that they had. But I actually think that the profile of the players between the two counties are very similar. We can't forget that Tyrone played an All-Ireland final in 2018, and I think 11 of the starting team that bet Kerry played that day against Dublin, so they have that experience in the bag. Obviously, Mayo got to an All-Ireland final last year with a very young team, but there's been huge transition in both camps, whether it be the new management coming in Tyrone or James Horan dealing with 7 or 8 very key players moving on and 7 or 8 younger players coming through over the last wee while. I want to get Anthony's take on this. Are you strongly feeling either way, Anthony, about where you think this is going to go? Because I'm finding it very difficult to call it at this stage.
I'm not, Tommy. I flip every couple of hours, to be honest with you. I'm Tyrone one minute and Mayo the next. And I think it's for a number of reasons. You know, the bookies very rarely get it wrong. And I think it just shows how difficult it's going to be by the pricing of this. The way I look at it is, I think you're right in the sense of the Tyrone ambushing Kerry. Now, it has to be said, Kerry were, you know, one ball away from bringing that game right to the death and going into penalties and all that rest of the stuff. And I think Kerry only found in that period of extra time the balance that they should have had, certainly around the middle with O'Connor coming in. They needed a much more mobile midfield to really go at Tyrone. They also stopped, they had to stop bringing the ball straight into the channel and being turned over. And instead of doing that, they had to go in and drive at that channel and then actually flick the ball out. Or, in actually, a matter of fact, something that Dublin always did against this Tyrone team, which is just unbelievably keep the width on the pitch. Like, if you remember the Dublin teams that would have set up against Tyrone over the last number of years, certainly in the final, they literally would have the men right out in the sideline. So the idea was they were dragging that. They were saying to Tyrone, listen, if you're going to protect that D, you're only going to do it with 1 or 2 players. And by the time you get people back, we'll have already been ahead of you. So Mayo will not fall into that same trap as Kerry did. I spoke to you guys about this after the match. The naivety of Kerry was alarming. And especially the fact that they didn't change things. So Mayo will not do that. But at the flip side of that, Mayo had only 5 points on the board after 52 minutes against Dublin. Mm. So you're kind of going, well, where are they going to get the scores from here? Now, I flip again and go, people are jumping all over Aidan O'Shea. Aidan really should have had 3 points in that first half, and he could have even had more racked up. Yeah, exactly. So I think Aidan did a lot of good things. I think he was trying way too hard. And I think he, as a man, needs, you know, I think he needs that bit of a motivation where he's kind of going up against a lot of people. He's had that plenty in his career. The fella, to be fair, you know, who has been an absolute warrior for Mayo, but he has as many detractors as he has fans, and he seems to have more detractors. Well, maybe he has them within the county.
Will he definitely start, Andy?
Well, that's, I think that's...
Yeah, I would start him 100%.
I think there are questions about whether or not he'll be starting. I think they're actually coming from inside the county too. Like, I think actually people are misconstruing that substitution the last day with Mayo's change of style, where in truth, after Henley kicks that point when O'Shea comes off, they don't get their seventh score until the 63rd minute when Dublin's legs start going. So I'll let you jump in now and explain why you think O'Shea's going to start. I agree with you. I think he could have a massive influence at the weekend.
Well, I think he does, because first of all, he's playing with a relatively young forward line around him. You know, so Conroy is the young lad. They've sprinkled that. You know, they've lost Killian O'Connor, obviously, who would have been a fella. He was a totem pole. He was well able to take abuse from fullbacks, but he was also well able to take his scores, and he was well able to win a ball. They don't have that necessarily now. And Tyrone have, with Hamsey, they have a number of tough, teak, strong physical fullbacks who will be looking to give it plenty, and who will want to keep it tight and have a tight area in and around, as I said, that D and that goal. So for me, O'Shea has to start in there, because he will drag and he'll attract that abuse and he'll attract that physicality, and he'll be well able for it.
But is he not going to get completely smothered out of it? Given how good their attacking is and how immobile he looked against Dublin when he had the ball in hand, is he not going to get completely smothered out of it if and when he does get on the ball?
Well, the thing about it is that's if you want to give him the ball or not. You know, so you could essentially use him as a foil. You could essentially use him as a player who's in there and he's occupying one or two men. Because, like, if I was coming up against him as a manager, you're thinking, you know what, do I really want him one-on-one with a defender in there? No matter how big my defender is, do I want him one-on-one standing in around the edge of the square and the rest of the forwards 30, 40 yards from him and balls being pinged into him? Now, Mayo didn't do it great the last day, but they've had a lot of time to prepare over the last number of weeks to try and see, can they improve that? I still think he got enough ball against Dublin. He just didn't do the right things with it. His decision making was off. And whatever way, was that pressure? Was that him trying to, you know, really push himself? I don't know what it was. But if I was him, I would be trying to, as I say, occupy some defenders. And if I got ball, I'd be just looking for marks. And if I didn't get marks, I would be looking just to flick balls left and right or tap them down. Because it does give Mayo that something different, which Tyrone have when they bring McShane in, which is that focal point, you know. And I think this game, Johnny, and it could be a war of attrition for the first 45, 50 minutes, which I think could be both teams set up and say, listen, let's see what you have there. You know, bring it on to us. We're going to look to counterattack you, because Mayo have an unbelievably disciplined and an unbelievably aggressive defence that look to turn you over all over the pitch. And they also have a bunch of forwards that love hard work. Like, the one thing the Tyrone boys, if you remember, I think Tyrone had the fullback line of Tyrone each scored a point
in the first half.
Yeah, so they were let go. You know, Clifford let, you know, for all of the Kerry prowess going forward, they didn't do their work going the other way.
Well, just
Tyrone recognised this, you know, and they kick points. Mayo won't do that.
Yeah, just on what I found fascinating about the Tyrone is their kick-out strategy, obviously, in effect, that's obviously their own kick-outs, but also the fact that they more or less threw the modern football rule book out the window and sort of let Kerry have possession, and they were like kind of happy to defend sort of deep. So surely there's going to be some kind of left field strategy from either team to counter the narrative of what's expected in the final, because they're two exceptionally well coached teams. So Tyrone will probably change something up. Do you see that, like, the kickouts Mayo were so good against Dublin, that's surely going to have a massive influence on the game?
Yeah, they don't. The Mayo midfield is, as I referenced earlier on, it's a very, very mobile midfield.
Which Kerry's isn't.
Correct. Mm. And Kerry have a bit more of size and a bit more of the traditional kind of midfielder who's going to be well able to go up. And they use David Moran basically as a focal point. He stays relatively central. And what they try to do is they try to then basically allow him to be to actually go and attack the ball as it's floating in the air. The Tyrone, and we discussed this, Tommy, the Tyrone idea was obviously, well, listen, lads, if we're going to lose, we're going to lose at 60 yards from goal. We're not going to lose at 25 or 30 yards from goal, especially with this forward line that could interlink play and next thing it's in the back of the net. So I think Tyrone took a kind of a calculated decision of, well, even if we lose it there, we'll defend ourselves and we'll be set. I can't see them changing too much on that. But I think they will think themselves that they'll get a bit more joy from those long kickouts. But the Mayo press and the Mayo forward press is exceptional. And they really hunt you down. They hunt you down. They corral you down into areas where you don't want to be. And I think a key thing for Tyrone of their defensive structure is Petey Hart. I think he's vital. Mm. I think he goes about his business relatively kind of in the quiet. But when you actually analyse him and you go back on the tape, you're kind of saying to yourself, Jesus, that lad, he started most attacks. He got on a number of attacks and he laid the ball off the forwards. He's a focal point and he's absolutely vital for them. If I was Mayo, I wouldn't allow him to do that. I would actually say to someone, listen, you're being deployed. You're going to actually mark him. Whether he's the defence or not, I'd say you're actually going to mark him. You're going to take him out of the game. Much the same as what, obviously, Tyrone did with Paddy Clifford. I think you have to go, it's the old Bill Belichick thing, you have to go after the strengths of the other team. And Hart, for me, is one of those massive strengths for Tyrone. And I think he's a really, choose the pun, but he's the beating heart of that team. You know, he really is.
Who would you put in the Anthony?
Oh, that, I haven't quite worked on that. It's like part of me would love to kind of see, say, the likes of Keegan on him, you know, or even Durkin. But then, you know, do you sacrifice a halfback to come up? The reason on my thinking with Durkin is because if he's in the forward line, he's well able to take a score. You don't just want a defender on him who's going to run around Arfram. You need someone on him that's actually going to pose him questions. And he has to get that fear of, well, if someone turns me over here, that actually he's going to score. So if you remember the old duels that you had with Connolly and Keegan, the two of them would end up with nearly 3 points each, you know, because they were both well able to kick scores, obviously, but they were both able to defend and attack and da-da-da. So it's a similar, it's not exactly similar because you obviously Petey plays most of his game in that kind of defensive area. But if you look at him, the reason I'm saying he's so important is he literally is, he's the stitch in the middle of that defence. And Tyrone, over the last number of years, they've leaked goals right down the middle of the pitch. That's where most teams have come right down at them. A couple of quick interplays, hands, through the middle, pull the six out, and away you go and get goals. They've only had one goal conceded up to Kerry, which was the Donegal game, and it was a goal again that went straight down the middle. And the idea is there is as people come down, they close the net on teams. And the defender is always defending from the inside out. So he's never getting pulled out. They don't really care if you win the ball 40, 50 yards out on the wing. They've learned that lesson. But what they're saying is if this ball comes in here into the middle, now we're going to look our first. I think you need to get him out of there. And I think you need to create the space. And ultimately, what you need to do is obviously, as I said, attack that space and then look for balls to be flicked out and kick from long range. If Mayo get their long range shooting going early, and they get their confidence up, I think they'll win it. But I think if they start to leak a few and the confidence starts to drain, and instead of taking that shot on, you know, you all of a sudden you do an extra hand pass, well, then I think they'll be in trouble.
That's an interesting point, Andy. And just on that, Tommy, because Mayo were clearly petrified of Dublin getting goals in the first half. They're sort of half happy, as Andy said. They were kind of letting them shoot. Obviously, it was basically true as well that Tyrone, again, they were just petrified of conceding goals against Kerry. So much of this game is presumably going to come down to long-term shooting, long-distance shooting, rather.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair point, Johnny. And I think that we know for a fact that a lot of Mayo scores and their attacks come from that half-back line, as Anthony had mentioned. It comes from their midfielders, who are very attacking in terms of Matty Ruan and Conor Loftus. like Tommy Conroy stood up the last day. We saw the kind of coming of age of Tommy Conroy, but it didn't happen until the 68-69 minute. And that was credit to Horan for leaving him on the pitch, I suppose, but also credit to Tommy Conroy for having the composure, the legs, the work done over the last year to be good enough in the last 15-20 minutes to essentially win that game for Mayo. Conroy isn't a player to kick a ball from 45 yards, but Dermot O'Connor is. So they're going to need a couple of points from O'Connor. They're going to need a couple of points from Loftus. They're going to need Rowan, Keegan, Durkin tagging on points. And you're right, Mayo are going to need to figure out a way of scoring goals. So whether that's true, a direct ball into Aidan O'Shea, as Anthony is saying, and I fully believe that Aidan O'Shea can have a big influence this weekend. You talk about fine margins. Three balls, long balls into him. Not the greatest of passes, but he's such a big man, he'll win them in the forward line. Three long balls into him in the Dublin game. Two in the first half. One, the mark that he should have scored. Another one that he put wide that he should have scored. And then the second half, a brilliant long ball in that he caught in the end line. He was probably just in his own head. He either should have taken the mark or he should have gone around the man and buried it, but he pulled it out of play. On another day, Aidan O'Shea could have had 1-2 there, 3 points. So I think that's massive. There's one other big thing that I think could happen here. There was a bit of an argument about it on the football pod during the week. I do reckon Tyrone will pull a fast one or a tactical tweak. I think they'll make a change. I don't think that their setup against Kerry, horses for courses, was perfect. They were able to match up Kerry. They put specific men in specific jobs, like Conor Myler, like Kieran McGeary, like Frank Burns, Michael O'Neill, say, Conor McKenna. They all had different roles, and it was perfectly created to stop that Kerry team. They're going to have to change it up a wee bit to be able to exploit Mayo. And I think that could be up front and in midfield, where they might drop out one of the big lads, Kennedy and Kilpatrick. I'm quoting Andy Moran here. He reckons this might happen. And then maybe Andy was suggesting Matty Donnelly might come out and you might bring in a Darragh Canavan or a Mark Bradley. I actually think Conor McKenna could end up in midfield the next day and you could be bringing in one of those forwards. I don't know what you think, Anthony, but I think Tyrone are going to have to change it up a wee bit. I think there's actually a wee bit of pressure on Tyrone to actually, it's an unspoken pressure, I suppose, to actually change their system this weekend because it was so perfectly set to beat Kerry. I think they have to change it to beat Mayo.
Yeah, and just... So just before we finish up, psychologically, Joe Brawley wrote about this on Sunday, the difference in the reaction to the respective semi-final wins, and a few people have said this to me as well. I wanted to laud Mayo for the incredible coming back and beating Dublin after Colm O'Rourke saying basically we may as well go home at half time and winning, running away with it in extra time. And I thought they were more than due their celebration. Is there any suggestion at all that Tyrone are in a better mental place going into the final and that Mayo over celebrated their semi final, Andy, or is that too simplistic in terms of like underrating the achievement of actually being here and beating the Dubs?
I think to be honest with you, I think there's a semblance of that stuff, and the more and more you go, obviously every year, and the more that psychology comes into the game, and the more that people understand the game, even as players, and the old adage of sticking the newspaper article up on the wall, I think it's absolute codswallop if you ask myself, because I think if you're not preferred, these are essentially professional athletes,
exactly.
Now. Right, so you need to be in a place where if you are a type of an individual, and I'm not saying this, but if you're a type of an individual like Aidan O'Shea, who has no problem doing an interview and having people in his home, like that's water off a duck's back, Aidan. That's the type of personality he is, right? Now, does that make him a bad footballer or a good footballer? No, it doesn't, because
exactly.
He doesn't football on the pitch. So whether I'm a journalist and I'm casting aspirations on that, I think is wrong, right? Because that's something that he's done. Yes, he's the captain of the team, but if he wants to do that, if he wants to get pictured with on the top of a Ferrari with 17 models, best of luck to him. But what it's all about the 70 minutes and what he's going to do on the pitch. If you want to stay at home in a log cabin chopping wood and someone thinking that you're a great grizzly bear and you don't talk to anyone and you're a dour individual, I'm not saying that, but if that's the picture you want to depict, well then that's who you are. That's fine. It's all about when you cross the white line. And for me, whether Mayo wanted to celebrate, the Mayo people are different to the Tyrone people. The Mayo camp is different to the Tyrone camp. I'm not saying one is better than another. One maybe needs Tyrone, I think, are have always wanted, and most teams like, a kind of a motivation as regards everyone's against us. And to be fair to them, they're probably sitting there going, do you know what? Like, we've just after seen off Kerry, and people are still just talking about Mayo. And even us, we're talking about Mayo here a lot rather than Tyrone. So people are, they're probably up there saying, no one's giving us any credit. No one's still giving us credit. And no one will give us credit until we actually lift the Sam Maguire. So that's their motivation, I would feel, right? That's their psychological edge, and I think they'd be playing on that. I think for Mayo have to stop this. If I was down there, and I think James Horan is an unbelievably smart and a great manager, and from knowing James the little that I do, I think they have to stop this safety net talk. You know, I've heard it during the week. Ah, well, Mayo, and sure, if we lose, we'll just get back up again and we'll go next year. That has to stop for me. If I was down there, I'd be saying, enough of this. We're 10 years at this. Enough of this absolute crap. We're going out and we're going out to win this. I put the pressure on the players. Say, no, we're going out, lads, and we're not going to leave this pitch until we have Sam Maguire in the back of the bus or the front of the bus, and that's the end.
Okay, 17 models and 70 minutes. Beautiful. And 70 years as well. Very, very briefly. It's literally one word here. Who wins?
Oh, Jesus, stop. It's only Wednesday. I'm still flipping. I can't do that until at least Friday.
That's sitting on the fence. Tommy Rooney.
Johnny Weaver, prediction slot on a Friday morning, the GAA quick pick, so I'm going to save my shout till then.
I've had my one little moment in the sun here with the two lads and I'm not getting a prediction. Lads,
go on, what are you going for?
Mayo. I'm confident Mayo will win.
Okay.
In fact, I think people are like, God, if it were bad Max Day tipping us, if Johnny Ward is tipping us, we're really screwed, but hopefully that's not the case. Thanks, lads.
Cheers,
Off the Ball AM is brought to you, OTB AM is brought to you by Gillette. Good mornings. Good morning start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. Tomorrow morning on OTB AM, we're live from Castlebar as Owen Sheehan brings us a special show from Mayo. This is going to be one to savour ahead of the All-Ireland Final. We'll be in Tyrone on Friday morning.
OTB AM. With Gillette, put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.